I'm not always making a presentation. Two of you, you're making a presentation of 10 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, and good morning. And our sincere thanks to the chairperson and honourable members of this committee for allowing us to present before you today. My name is Michael Swain. I serve as the Executive Director of Freedom of Religion of South Africa, known as 4SA. We represent the views and opinions of over 6 million people from a broad cross-section of the faith community, and our mandate is to protect and promote our constitutional rights to enjoy freedom of religion. Myself and my colleague advocate Nadine Vardenhorst will be presenting this morning on the perspectives of 4SA. 4SA has been actively involved and engaged in this process initiated by the CRL since its inception, and we were one of the original 85 religious organizations invited to the CRL's hearings on the commercialization of religion and abuse of people's belief systems. We subsequently have made detailed submissions, attended various presentations by the CRL, and have also met with them at their offices. It should be noted that we are on record expressing gratitude to the CRL for identifying a range of issues relating to the religious community that indeed need to be addressed. We have stated in our submissions and articles we have written and presentations that we have made that freedom of religion can never be used as a cloak or an excuse for abusing or harming people. Such actions are reprehensible, contrary to the fundamental tenets of all major religions. We have equally noted that all these abuses identified by the CRL in its report, whether criminal or civil, can and therefore we submit should be dealt with by applying the full weight of the law, and have expressed concern that these laws are not being properly enforced. 4SA is a legal advocacy organization, and our approach has been to conduct careful legal analysis of all aspects of the CRL's final report on the commercialization of religion and abuse of people's belief systems. As lawyers, we can only comment on what the CRL's final report actually says, not what its intentions may or may not have been. All our concerns and reservations come from what the CRL itself has officially stated in their report and in various presentations that they have made. In this process, we have broadly consulted with other legal and constitutional experts to ensure that such analysis is accurate and substantiated. These include Christian Lawyers Association, the Institute of International for Religious Freedoms, and the South African Council for the Protection and Promotion of Religious Rights and Freedoms. The role of the latter organization is to oversee compliance with the SA Charter for the Promotion and Protection of Religious Rights and Freedoms, to which the CRL is in fact also a signatory. Ours is therefore not an isolated position, and our initial submission to the CRL's first draft of the report was in fact a joint submission with the CRRF. Our concern is that it has become increasingly apparent that the concerns which 4SA and indeed many other organizations have expressed regarding the CRL's recommendations have not been seriously considered or taken into account by the CRL in its final report. Be that as it may, 4SA remains committed to assisting the CRL and to contributing to the process of finding truly self-regulatory, sustainable, and scalable solutions to the issues which the CRL report has legitimately identified. As this committee will recall when it convened on this last matter on the 27th of June, the CRL made a long and detailed presentation outlining the issues it had identified and proposing an elaborate structure that would result in every religious practitioner and place of worship being licensed by the CRL. On that day already, 4SA, who happened to be attending that meeting as an observer, having been notified of the meeting by the CRL the day before, were given the opportunity by yourself, sir, to make some impromptu comments on the CRL presentation. However, we are grateful to this committee for giving us the opportunity now to more formally address this committee and to specifically inform it that, contrary to the assertions made at that meeting by the CRL, there is a high level of concern across a broad spectrum of the religious community regarding the implications of the recommendations made in the CRL's report. We believe that these next 2 days, therefore, do present an important opportunity for those concerns to be addressed and heard, and now I will Nadine Vardenhorst to continue.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have seen a copy of the written submissions made by 4SA jointly also with the South African Council for Religious Rights and Freedoms in response to the CRL's initial report and thereafter also the final report to yourself and the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. The committee members can go through that in their own time. What I'd like to do in the remaining time at our disposal is to highlight just some of our main concerns relating to the CRL's recommendations, emphasizing once again that we do agree with the CRL, that there are problems, and that these need to be addressed. What we don't agree with, however, are the proposed solutions offered by the CRL, which we, along with other legal experts, believe to be unnecessary in light of existing legislation, but also unconstitutional and unworkable. And if I may address those briefly, why unconstitutional? Mr. Chair, up to now, the relationship between religion and state has been one of cooperation. Freedom of religion is acknowledged and constitutionally guaranteed, granting individuals, religious institutions, and communities maximum freedom to teach, preach, and practice their religious convictions and beliefs, and also to operate religious institutions within the law of the land, while on the other hand placing a duty on the state to create a positive environment for religion and religious freedom to thrive. Now, should the CRL's recommendations be accepted, it would completely change this historic relationship between state and religion. And it would make the CRL, who in terms of the Constitution is an institution of state, the head of religion in South Africa. In this regard, one has to look no further than the organogram on page 42 of the CRL's final report to see what is being proposed. And you can see it there on the slide presentation where the CRL Rights Commission appears right at the top. That the CRL will have the final say and control over religion and religious bodies in South Africa is also made clear from statements such as the following in the report, that the CRL will be, quote, final arbiter in all matters. This is on page 48 of the final report, with, again, quote, final decision powers, unquote, on page 47 of the final report. This, Mr. Chair, with respect, is not self-regulation, but a form of state regulation of religion. It was never intended, either in terms of the Constitution or the CRL Act, for the CRL to take up this role of licensing and controlling that it now claims for itself. The CRL's mandate with respect is to promote and protect the rights of religious communities, not to license and control. What is more, contrary to what the CRL is suggesting, it is inevitable that the Commission, if it had to take up this position, will take decisions regarding the acceptability of doctrinal belief and expression. As we all know, there is a very fine line between belief and practice, with practice generally being the external manifestation of a belief. And for this reason, it may be very difficult, if not impossible, to police practice without also touching on doctrinal beliefs. And for these reasons, we are concerned that the CRL's recommendations are an infringement of the right to religious freedom as well as freedom of association. If I may briefly just touch then on why unworkable. Now, the CRL report proposes the broad-scale regulation of religion through various regulatory bodies under the final auspices and control of the CRL, as we've seen. So, for example, the report proposes the registration of various umbrella bodies for each religion, who will then all be represented on one peer review committee per religion. And out of the one peer review committee, a single representative, supposedly, will be elected to represent the entire religion on the multi-faith peer review council. It is very difficult with respect to see how this will work in practice. Now, using Christianity as an example, there are literally tens of thousands of denominations, non-denominational and independent churches or church groupings in South Africa. And the reason why there are so many is because they believe so differently in relation to church organization, interpretation of scripture, practice of the belief, and so forth. It is, with respect, very difficult to imagine a peer review committee that is representative of them all, and impossible with respect to imagine how a single peer review committee member could represent all of them at the level of the peer review council. I'm just allowed to have a sip of water. And for this reason, Mr. Chair, we are concerned that the CRL's recommendations, though well-intended, which we accept, are not workable. An important question which is not addressed by the CRL report and which this committee will have to seriously consider before accepting the CRL's recommendations relates, of course, to the costs involved in setting up, running, and monitoring these regulatory structures. It is evident that what the CRL is proposing will require a fairly large bureaucracy that is likely to cost millions of rand per annum. Is this a responsible cost to add to the state fiscus? And if it is to be paid for by religious institutions themselves, is this an appropriate cost for them to bear? Is such an additional state-imposed cost even legal, given that it may prevent institutions from operating at all? And that brings me then to the conclusion, Mr. Chair, an alternative recommendation. Now, we have in our submission to the CRL, and indeed to COFSA, submitted that we believe the CRL's recommendations also to be unnecessary in light of existing legislation, which is sufficient to deal with each and every problem identified by the CRL. And we submit that instead of creating new legislation, that government's already limited resources and capacity should rather be directed towards the enforcement and, where necessary, strengthening of what's already there. In addition, and in light of the concerns raised in respect of the CRL's proposed recommendations, we propose that the report be referred back to the CRL and that time and opportunity be given for a broad-based consultation of the religious community of South Africa, driven by the religious community itself, to propose solutions to the issues the CRL have identified. As our Executive Director has mentioned at the beginning, the CRL recommendations follow hearings convened with but a random sample of 85 religious and African traditional religion leaders in South Africa only, 85. As such, it would be correct to say that the broad and diverse religious community in South Africa has not been consulted on an issue which will directly affect each and every one of them. We have already been in conversation with organizations, some of whom are represented today, in relation to such a national conference of religious leaders to be held, where the issues can be properly tabled, discussed, and solutions proposed by the religious community for the religious community be adopted. And we would call upon the CRL as a key stakeholder in the religious sector to support and participate in such forum. Now, we do understand that some of the other organizations will be sharing more about this proposal and initiative as one of the recommendations, and I will therefore not elaborate further on it at this stage, save to say that we, from 4SA's side, would fully support and endorse such an initiative as a proactive way of confronting and addressing the legitimate concerns raised by the CRL in the report. And we would appeal to the Commission, or to this COCTA committee, to give the religious community of South Africa, as the ones who are directly affected by the CRL's report and proposed recommendations, the opportunity to own the process as well as the solutions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, Advocate Rosenhaus, for Mr. Twain for presentation. Thank you very much for that, and surely members of the committee have taken note of all the presentations. Then when we discuss it, we'll have time to have a general discussion on some of the presentations. But I understood you and the Twain is accepting that commercialization and abuse of people's belief is wrong. That we've got no question about. Let us take another tea. Thank you very much, Fossa, for the presentation. Of course, you met with us last year, also was it last year, early this year. We raised some of the issues, and thank you for making this presentation. Can we move to Association of Christian Novitiate Practitioners? okay. I'm not sure they are not far. Surely the staff must arrange a place where a presentation will be made. At least we can see who is making a presentation. You'll also assist us to introduce yourself. For the benefit of the members, there's a space here. Duve, assist our invited guests. Switch it on.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is JP van der Walt, and I'm the secretary of the Association of Christian Religious Practitioners. Thank you very much for the opportunity that's been granted to ACRP to participate in these proceedings today. I bring you the greetings of our board and the conference, our annual conference, which is held recently. In the document that's being handed out, you'll see the names of our board, below on the cover page, and you will also then be able to follow me. I haven't got a PowerPoint presentation, but please follow me in this memorandum. I'll just read part of it, the core focus part of it. Now, the Association of Christian Religious Practitioners was established a while ago on the suggestion and the request of the South African South African Qualification Authority, for reasons which is explained in the annexure of this report, so I'm not going to cover that, but it would be good if members could just look at the background and the history of our organization. So first, as an overview, the purpose of our submission is to communicate to the COCTA Portfolio Committee ACRP's views on the CRL Commission's report. The association's views can be summarized as follows. Firstly, ACRP concurs with the CRL Commission report that there are certain serious issues in the field of religious activity that need to be corrected. The association shares the concern of many about the evidence of misconduct in certain churches and among some faith leaders that became evident in the CRL report. Secondly, it is, however, our contention that ample institutions and instruments to deal with the situation are already in place. These could and should certainly be used better. The solution is, however, not to duplicate these through new laws and highly coercive structures that would seriously jeopardize religious freedom in our country. And thirdly, a proper role for CRL would rather be to support existing structures, existing instruments, and existing processes, and through this to strengthen the hand of the responsible component of the religious profession itself to deal with irresponsible activities where these do occur among peers. To the extent that CRL will involve itself with support and to strengthening of the responsible component of the profession and will focus on the use of existing structures, instruments, and processes, ACRP wants to register its unequivocal support to such action of CRL. But we clearly want to state that duplication of existing processes and instruments and the creation of coercive structures that will jeopardize religious freedom are strongly opposed. There are many angles from where proposals of CRL could be addressed. It will be left to other participants to the hearings or to the committee meeting to address important matters such as maintenance of religious freedom and related arguments. It can also be argued that ample provision has already been made in existing laws and legal practices for the level of control that is needed to overcome the problems identified by the CRL. These include combination of existing structures and communication lines of religious institutions, together with common law, corporate governance measures in company and social development legislation, and the King reports, financial and tax laws that are in place, immigration laws, labor laws, educational laws, etc. All of those provide all the required mechanisms and instruments to do this. It must just be used better. The rest of this submission will focus on one aspect only, namely that what the CRL wants to do boils down to the statutory establishment of a professional body for religious professionals, but this has already also been provided for and should not be duplicated through new legislation. It's been provided for in the law of Parliament and should not be duplicated through new legislation and processes envisaged by the CRL. So let us then focus on the issue regarding professional body for religious professionals. Core to what the CRL wants to address through new legislation and through the establishment of new structures is the professionalization of religious professions across the board. For this, the CRL envisages the introduction of a mechanism to serve as professional bodies for religious professionals. In their final report, CRL wrote, and I'm reading the sentence on the last line of this page, the registration, and I'm quoting CRL report, paragraph 19, this registration mechanism that they propose for religious leaders would be similar to that of other professional bodies, such as lawyers, nurses, doctors, and engineers. We believe this registration mechanism will also help to professionalize the religious sector further without compromising the internal requirements of various institutions for recognizing those of religious leader. So you see the emphasis there of establishing through the new proposed legislation a professional body for religious professionals. This statement suggests that CRL is unaware of the existing statutory mechanism that supports the formal professionalization and effective self-regulation of professions, including religious professions, which has already been created in an Act of Parliament. I refer you to the National Qualifications Framework Act 67 of 2008, the NQF Act, which does precisely that. The NQF Act was promulgated, among others, to enable a variety of professions to establish such professional bodies and through these bodies to regulate and professionalize themselves. In Annexure 2, we have an excerpt from the NQF Act that deals with professional bodies. Through the NQF Act, the SA Qualifications Authority, or SAQA, was tasked to manage the establishment of professional bodies. So CRL would duplicate this function which has already been given to SAQA to manage the establishment of professional bodies for professions that were identified in the document called the Organizing Framework for Occupations, or OFO. Now, the OFO was compiled in 2012 by the Department of Higher Education and Training in cooperation with the Department of Labor. The OFO identifies religious professionals in their code 2636 and religious associate professionals, code 3413, among other professions as professions that professional bodies have to be established for. In terms of the professions, the provisions of the NQF Act and SAQA policy, the establishment of the professional body has to be done, and this is important, Chairperson, has to be done by the relevant community of expert practitioners of that profession, so by the profession itself, and not by an institution or instrument of state, of which CRL is one. The professionalization mechanism in the Act guarantees full self-regulation by the relevant occupation. SAQA's policies and processes regarding the professional bodies are described in the policy document of SAQA called Policy and Criteria for Recognizing a Professional Body and the Registering of Professional Designation for the Purposes of the National Qualification Framework Act. And the reference to that policy document is in our submission here. SAQA has furthermore established the directorate, the whole directorate registration and recognition to oversee the complex processes of guiding the relevant communities of expert practitioners to establish and manage their own professional bodies. Now, after extensive consultations and lengthy preparations, ACRP was actually created on the suggestion by SAQA that such a body should be formed, and with a lot of consultation with very wide in the religious environment among churches and other institutions, ministries, ACRP was formed for the specific purpose to function as a professional body, and ACRP was then, after a long process of consultation and formation, recently registered by SAQA as a professional body for religious professionals. So this religious body is already in place in terms of the requirements of the NQF Act. In preparing for this, ACRP developed all the systems and processes to fulfill the functions of a professional body in consultation and in cooperation with a broad spectrum of, specifically in the Christian environment, but a broad spectrum of role players and churches and ministries under the auspices of SAQA and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, who deals with the training side. ACRP as a professional body was formed through, as I said, a wide consultative and participatory process. It was formed as a service to churches, not as a control mechanism of churches, but as a service to churches who need the Christian ministries also and training institutions who experience a need for such services to create create trust among members of the public. Its purpose was primarily to make formally recognized professional body services available to churches, ministries, and training institutions in the independent church sector, but ACRP services are also obviously available to any other church or any other ministry who want to use such services. The intention is not to force any church or ministry to use these services. The intention is that ACRP will be used voluntarily by churches, ministries, and trainers as a joint platform based on a statute of government to promote professionalism and self-regulation of peer review and so on. And then in the rest of this document, we set out what are the different functions of a professional body. You'll see it's quite intricate, but all of that has been provided for now in the systems and the structures in cooperation with many churches and church networks and so on. And then in the middle of the next page, just say, as formally recognized and registered professional body for religious professionals in the Christian tradition, the ACRP has now the statutory responsibility to fulfill these functions, which has been identified in the Act, in cooperation and with the participating churches and institutions. Important to note, however, is that although this function is supported by a statute of state, this function is owned by the relevant profession and participating institutions. It is fully based on the principle of self-regulation. Its power is not coercion, but trust, built through voluntary participation of institutions of goodwill and through the proper performance of the relevant functions. Now, this has been agreed with SACWA that this is for the Christian tradition in broad terms. With experience gained, ACRP will also be willing to assist other non-Christian religious groups with the development of similar self-regulatory professional bodies under the guidance of SACWA. My final statement there, should the CRL continue with its intention to establish a structure to fulfill the role of professional bodies, it will duplicate what is already provided for in the National Qualification Framework Act and what has already been put in place within the SACWA framework. The last sentence of my submission, additional laws and structures will be superfluous, will complicate matters, and will jeopardize religious freedom. The CRL should rather focus on facilitating self-regulatory processes and promoting the effective use of those opportunities, practices, structures, and laws that already exist. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Van den Bart, for your submission. Thank you for the written submission. I think the copy is with us. Thank you very much for that. Okay. Let us call the next presentation. South African Council for Religious Rights and Freedom. Come this way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity. My name is Pieter Koertsen, and I am the president of the South African Council of Religious Rights and Freedoms. Now, this council is responsible for the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedom, which I hold here in my hand. And this has been accepted by the mainline churches in South Africa, the Jewish community, the Muslim community, the Hindu community, and also the South African traditional religions. So we believe we represent here a very broad spectrum of religious bodies in South Africa. Mr. Chair, we represented to you our response to the CRL Rights Commission report that was sent in to Mrs. Kasim, so you have that document available. We also distributed it to all the members of our council. Now, we are very grateful for the work which the CRL Commission has done, and they have pointed out issues that are very important for us in South Africa to address. We do, however, not agree with their proposals, because we think that comes down, in a few short words, to state regulation of religion, and that goes in against against the very grain of religious freedom. Now, my colleague here with me, Professor Erasmus Malherbe, who is a constitutional scholar, has prepared a few pages on why we think that the report and the recommendations of the CRL Commission are unconstitutional and can create a lot of problems forward. And I would appreciate it if you will give him the opportunity to say a few words on that. Let me just, by closing my part, my contribution, say that we also feel that a better way to go is to get all the religions together and let's start working on what the obligations of religions are in South Africa. What will religions do when there is a misuse of religion? And we think that is the way that we should go. I would be honored if you would now ask Professor Malherbe to come forward and speak to us on the unconstitutionality.
Thank you, Chair. May the time that it took me to come to the front, may that be deducted from my time. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. Thank you very much. Yes, you will hear a lot today about the fact that religious freedom will be limited if these proposals are implemented as they stand. What I want to jump to, with your permission, is the question that then obviously comes to the front, and that is, are these proposals then constitutional? If it is a limitation on religious freedom, will it be a constitutional limitation on religious freedom? And for that, we have to go to Section 36 of the Constitution, which provides that the limitation of a constitutional right must be reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. And then the Section 36 gives us five factors to consider in determining the answer to that question. The first factor is, what is the nature of the right? How important is the right? And I think just looking at this packed room that you have here today shows us how important this right is to the people of South Africa. And the Constitutional Court is also on record how important religion and religious freedom are to the general public in South Africa. The second factor is, how important is the purpose of the limitation? Now, here we must look at the report and find the purpose, because it's not clearly stated. But the purpose, I think, that we can infer is to protect individuals from abuses and malpractices in religion, among religious bodies and religious practitioners. That is in itself legitimate and lawful, but it raises serious questions, because there's no evidence in the report of how widespread this is. We don't really know how widespread it is. We need more information. We need more evidence. And secondly, the report does not show how this limitation, the state regulation of religion, will in fact achieve the purpose, namely to combat the abuse. So there are questions around the purpose, if we infer the purpose correctly. The third factor is, what is the nature and the extent of the limitation? The Constitutional Court said about this, the more substantial the inroad into fundamental rights, the more persuasive the grounds for justification must be. Now, if we consider this, we have a few questions around this. First of all, it's clear that key components of the right to religious freedom will be affected. Secondly, the proposals are sweeping in nature. It will include all religions, all religious practitioners, not only those committing abuses. Everybody will be subject to this system of state regulation. So the nature and extent of the limitation, we can say, is fairly severe. And that brings us to the next two important factors. The one is, what is the relation between the limitation and the purpose? The Constitutional Court told us this is the rational relationship test. Is there a rational relationship between the limitation, namely the state regulation now of religion, and the purpose to combat abuse in religion? It's not easy to answer this question, because there are quite a few issues here, and I name only two. The first is it seems as if the solution by the Commission is overbroad or over-inclusive. It goes too far. It's like having outbreak of a contagious disease in Cape Town, and now you impose a quarantine on the whole of South Africa. Clearly, we feel that would go too far. That would be too much. And I believe this is the same here, in this case, that there is a state regulation, an elaborate system being put up for everybody just to combat the abuse that's been identified. We think it's overbroad. It goes too far. It's also doubtful, Chair, whether this limitation will indeed be effective, because the Commission itself states that there is legislation on the statute book, but it's not enforced effectively. But there's no evidence, there's no argument from the Commission side to tell us why a new system, also based and dependent on effective implementation, will be more effective. For example, a religious practitioner complies with all the requirements, is registered, and goes ahead and commit these abuses in any case. How are you now going to act against that person? You have to implement your laws that you put on the statute book effectively. And there's no argument why are the laws that's already been mentioned here, why are they then not effective, but a new system will be more effective. So there's really uncertainty whether we have a rational relationship between the limitation and the purpose of the limitation. The last factor, with your permission, Chair, the question is, are there less restrictive means to achieve this purpose? And it seems to me we have to look at the report. The report itself mentions that there are many pieces of legislation, and some of them have been mentioned here, already applicable to religious bodies and religious practitioners. Question is, can they be enforced more effectively? We don't have answers to that. The Commission doesn't give us answers to that. A second point, in terms of its own mandate, the Commission has a specific educational role to play when it comes to religion. And I believe this is an excellent opportunity for this kind of initiative, to come up with programs, educational and training programs, that can assist religious practitioners in becoming more aware how to treat their members, how to comply with their financial accountability, and so on. And lastly, I think that we can say that if the religious communities come together and they come up with something like a code of conduct and other instruments, that will also be an effective means to address the abuses. So, with a little creativity, we can come up with less restrictive means to achieve the purpose, Chair. And so my conclusion is that these proposals do not comply with Section 36. There is not a rational relationship between the limitation and its purpose. There are less restrictive means to achieve the purpose. And for that reason, I don't think that these proposals are compliant with Section 36, and therefore it would be unconstitutional. Just for 10 seconds, one last point. What really concerns me is that to implement this, Chair, you cannot only amend the Act of the Commission, Act 19 of 2002. You will also have to amend the Constitution, because in terms of the Constitution, which is the basis document also for the Commission, Section 185,
The Commission is an advisory body. And in conferring all these executive powers on the Commission will require quite a substantial amendment of Chapter 9 of the Constitution. I don't think, as the proposals now stand, that they that is consistent with the Constitution. In other words, I don't think it will be feasible to have that amendment. And for this reason also, I believe the proposals must fail. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor. But Professor, just a second for me. I think the question that the CRR right was trying to address is commercialization and abuse of people's beliefs. That's what we're trying to address. Not God, religions, and all that matters. Just those two areas. And of course, I think their comments should always assist us on that as members of parliament. And then, because the point that you are raising, the purpose and the limitation, the point is about this issue.
Yes, Chair, I think that's exactly the point we're trying to make, that this will be an overkill, and we must be more focused on what are the real issues. I think that the Commission did good work there, but they didn't give us enough. And then they came up with this broad system of state regulation just to address those abuses. And we think that's an overkill. We think for that reason it will not comply with Section 36, and we need to be more focused on what are the real solutions. And I believe that the religious communities of South Africa, they will come up with the solutions. Because we deplore what is happening. We stand with the Commission on what is happening. We don't want that in religion in South Africa, but we think we must address it in a different way.
Okay, thank you very much, Professor Melha. Thank again for your presentation. Can we proceed and request the South African Catholic Bishop Council, who is making a presentation?
Thank you very much. I am, and I'm with three other people.
Oh, okay.
They will sit behind me.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much indeed.
You're most welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. This is an important hearing and gathering, so we are grateful for this opportunity. My name is Archbishop Stephen Brislin. I am the Catholic Archbishop of Cape Town and the present President of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference. We have made a written submission, which is in your possession, and we would like to address basically 3 points this morning. The first 2 points will be addressed by our Secretary General of the Bishops' Conference, that's Sister Hermenegild Makoro. The third point will be addressed by Bishop Sitembele Sipuka, who is the Bishop of Mthatha and also the Vice President of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference. And that will be followed up by an elaboration by Advocate Mike Potia, who is part of the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office. We thank you for this opportunity of making this presentation. We believe that it is very important to address abuses that occur and which also tarnish our faith, but at the same time to ensure that religious freedom is protected. So we thank you for this opportunity, and I now hand over to Sister Hermenegild to present the first 2 points.
Thank you, Chair. The first point that I would like to address is that we as the Catholic Church, we do believe that there are some abuses committed by pastors, churches in the name of religion. We do not deny this, but we question whether it is a widespread problem. The CRL Commission has merely highlighted a few sensational cases. It has not conducted a proper study to determine the extent of the problem. The second point is all of the fraudulent or harmful practices identified by the CRL Commission can be effectively tackled through existing laws and existing institutions such as the police, SARS, the Reserve Bank, Home Affairs, etc. The Catholic Church and the vast majority of religious groups respect the law of the land and adhere scrupulously to regulations around non-profit organizations, tax, foreign exchange, etc. We believe that enforcement of the laws should be taken into account instead of duplicating.
To continue after Sister, the third point, we do not believe that it is necessary for religious organizations or churches to be regulated or supervised from outside. Indeed, were this to happen, it would be a clear violation of the rights to freedom of religion, belief, and opinion. Although the CRL Commission claims that its envisaged scheme of peer review committee and umbrella bodies would carry out self-regulation, it is clear that this would not be true self-regulation, but regulation imposed from outside a specific denomination, church, religious organization. As you can see from the people gathered here, the diversity of denominational traditions and differences, to formulate out of this one group that would be a peer review, it would not work. Such imposition, especially if it were to affect matters of doctrine, teaching and witness, would be unconstitutional.
Chairperson, you have just raised with the previous speaker, Professor Malherbe, the question about the fact that the Commission was supposed to focus on the commercialization of religion and then on the abuse of people's belief systems. We would ask your committee with respect, when it comes to examining the Commission's report clause by clause, and in particular the findings of the Commission, to focus on those findings which really identify instances of commercialization and instances of abuse, and then ask yourselves whether there are in fact also a number of findings and then recommendations flowing from those findings which have little or anything to do with commercialization or abuse. In our opinion, there are three categories of findings in this report. Some of them identify things which are clearly illegal, quite clearly so, no argument, and as many presenters have said, and I'm sure you're going to hear it again and again over the next few days, there are existing laws, there are existing institutions of state to tackle what is clearly illegal. Let them go and tackle them. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. Then the Commission has identified certain practices or behaviors which you might say are perhaps questionable, perhaps slightly undesirable, where there could be improvements, things like whether or not a particular church must have a bank account. Maybe it's desirable, maybe it's not always necessary. Those things which are, as I say, questionable or maybe just desirable can be dealt with through an educative and assisting type of approach rather than an enforcement approach. And the Commission, one of its mandates is indeed to assist religious communities and thereby obviously religious organizations in an educative way to facilitate their activities in a more professional way without enforcing it. And then thirdly, the Commission has identified a number of practices which in our view are perfectly normal and perfectly acceptable, but which for some reason the Commission seems to think are problematic. For example, the transfer of money out of this country to the so-called head office or something of a church. What is wrong with that? Now, it can be done legally, it can be done illegally. If it's done illegally, clearly it's wrong, it must be tackled. But if it is done legally, there's nothing wrong with it. The Commission says it's far too easy in this country to start a new church. What is wrong with starting a new church? Why is that a problem? Why should it be a problem, as the Commission appears to think it is, that a number of churches in this country are headed up by foreigners? Is that a problem? If so, why? If it's not, leave it alone. So our request to the committee is, when you examine all of these findings, categorize them into what is truly a problem and have it dealt with accordingly. What is merely a nice to have, and ask the commission to be of assistance. And thirdly, what should just be left alone, and then leave it alone. As simple as that. If I may then move, and Mr. Chairperson, if I may just mention, we did send in quite an extensive written submission at the end of August. I hope that members have received that. A further point which is of concern, and again it has already been mentioned by some, it seems if we look at section 19 of the report that the commission believes somehow that it is not part of the state or government. It says, the commission says, the issuing of registration certificates would be done by itself, the commission, and not by the state or the government. It's perfectly clear to us with respect that as a Chapter 9 institution, a state institution supporting democracy, the commission is part of the state. It is a state institution, and therefore it cannot escape the consequence of that, that if it is to register practitioners and organizations, it is doing so as a state body. That must not be overlooked. And then, lastly, again, a previous presenter spoke about workability. There are a number of the final recommendations in Section 19 of the report, which with respect are completely impractical and unworkable. And again, one has to then ask, what is behind this? The Commission recommends that every religious leader must have a physical location. Why? What is the need of that? Why should that be imposed on religious leaders? Throughout history, we have had thousands, tens of thousands of religious leaders who have precisely eschewed having a place of their own. We call them mendicants, and they move around. Some of the founders of our greatest religions were exactly like that. And then, even down to a field or a mountain, or as it says, a place next to a river or an ocean, must be registered as a place of worship. How, in heaven's name, are you going to do that practically? And what if the congregation decides to move to another field or to next to a new river? Must they come to the commission in Pretoria and seek registration for that next place? It's completely, with respect, it's absurd, but it is quite, quite unworkable. And with respect, I think it is part of the duty of this committee to interrogate those aspects of the report which are unworkable, impractical, overly imposing, and say to the Commission, please go back and rework this, look at it again, rather than giving Parliament's stamp of approval to these things. We would like to reiterate as well our deep opposition to the notion that these peer review committees and umbrella bodies can have any kind of controlling or authority oversight over specific denominations. Part of freedom of religion is that the different religious organizations and denominations and faiths respect each other, work together with each other without trying to impose their beliefs on each other. This system which the Commission seeks to put into place would amount to imposition. You would have Catholics trying to tell Anglicans what to think and do and practice. You would have Greek Orthodox people trying to tell Methodists what they should believe in and so on. Again, it's unworkable, but it also completely undermines the right to freedom of religion. The last point, Chairperson, this is a prime example of trying to crack a small nut with a very large sledgehammer. Or if you like a different metaphor, it's a cure that is going to be worse than the disease that we are dealing with. We think that if this was to find its way into law, and bear in mind that in the interim report of the Commission, a draft bill was presented. That draft bill has now, for some reason, slipped out of the final report, but it exists nevertheless. So the intention of the Commission is clearly that this should end up in law at some stage. If it were to do so, it would do immense harm to freedom of religion, to the practice of religion, and to religious communities in the country. And that is completely antithetical to the mandate of this Commission, which is to be of assistance to those communities, not to make life more difficult for them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much indeed for allowing us to present that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Councillor. Bishop, Councillor, for your presentation. Thank you very much, Bishop. Muslim Judicial Council, anyone want to make presentation? Muslim Judicial Council? Okay, can we proceed? As they come in, we'll allow them space. I think there must be some seats somewhere. I know that the room is very small. Can we move to International Institute of Religious Freedom? Check the last box.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Professor Christoph Sauer. I represent the International Institute for Religious Freedom. We have so far not made any submission. We have supported other groups in the background. I'm a professor of religious studies with a focus on religious freedom, and I have chairs both in Europe and in South Africa. The written submission has been prepared by Dr. Georgia Duplessis, who holds a doctorate in constitutional law and is a specialist on freedom of religion or belief in South Africa. I will exclusively focus on freedom of religion or belief in the international human rights framework with a focus on the role of the state, because that very much informs the assessment of the CLR Rights Commission final report, and this aspect cannot be found in the report itself and has not been mentioned by other submissions. So I hope this will be complementary. I agree with the other speakers. There is an observable problem, but the question is, what is the best solution and what role the state and its arms can have in it? Now, the sources I will base this submission on are the reports of the UN Special Rapporteur before the United Nations given in the last 6 years, and there's particularly one report on registration issues. And the other basis is this international law commentary on freedom of religion or belief, also by the Special Rapporteur and other scholars. And I have given you an extract in the appendix of my submission. But to make it more interesting, I will add a few things to what I have given you in writing. Number one, let's some relevant foundational observations on freedom of religion or belief as a human right. The basis is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of 1948, and that clearly provides that everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes the freedom to change a religion and to manifest a religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. This can be done as individuals and in community. This right is repeated in Article 18 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, of which South Africa is a party. Furthermore, Article 18, subsection 3 states that this freedom may only be limited if prescribed by law and which is necessary to protect public safety, order, health, or morals, or the fundamental rights and freedoms of others. Now, in order to properly understand this broad and foundational right, one has to remember three principles. Number one, it's universal. It applies to everybody, to the religious and to the non-religious. The Commission's report fails to cover atheists and agnostics. Everybody has to be treated the same. Number two, it is unalienable, which means nobody can take it away. It was there before the state was there. It is rooted in human dignity. The state
is in no authority to either grant it or take it away. The state has duties toward it, and I'll mention it right now. And the third aspect is they are non-discriminatory. They cannot be claimed for some and not for others. They must be applied equally. Everybody must be treated the same, the religious and the non-religious, the old and the new, the large and the small religious entities. And I have serious doubts that the approach of the Commission has sufficiently looked at the minorities, because they had a threshold, they only looked at the larger groups. Now, as to the role of the state, it has three duties, and those words are often repeated. The first is to respect. To respect that this is a given, and the state has to work around it, can't change it, can't move it. The second obligation is to protect, and that is your duty as parliamentarians, also to protect the country from an overreach. And the third duty is in the word to fulfill, which simply means to create conducive conditions for full enjoyment. And we have heard the question before, who is part of the state and shares its obligations? The answer is it's all arms of government on all levels, including the CLR Commission. And now those obligations are on three levels. On the constitutional framework level, and South Africa fares very, very well there, a laudable constitution, one of the most liberal in the world, and the legal norms. But it doesn't stop there. It's not sufficient that it's there in words. It must be working in the administrative procedures. This is where we seem to get into trouble. And the third level is on the implementation level, the effects those measures have on the daily life. That is the final measure, whether something restricts religious freedom or not. Not nice words and not claiming, yes, it's in the Constitution. That's not enough. Now let's move to the next issue, the narrow confines of permissible limitations. Any limitations of freedom of religion or belief must be justified, proportionate, and non-discriminatory within strictly delimited grounds. So you must ask, are those proposals justified? Are they properly justified? Number two, are they really proportionate? Or is somebody trying to kill a mosquito with a steamroller? And are they non-discriminatory? I have already claimed otherwise. And are they proven grounds? Has the case really been proven? I leave that up to you. That is your task. Then moving on to the issue of registration and regulation of religion. And there are, again, international standards for that. And South Africa has to uphold those standards. And I quote from my written submission in the appendix, the Commission of Human Rights Resolution 2005-40, so-and-so paragraphs, urges states to review whenever relevant existing registration practices in order to ensure the right of all persons to manifest their religion or belief alone or in community with others and in public or in private. So you must review carefully. And it urges states to ensure that, in accordance with appropriate national legislation, and I emphasize, in conformity with international human rights law, the freedom of all persons and members of groups to establish and maintain religious, charitable, or humanitarian institutions is fully respected and protected. These are the standards to comply with. Now, I have printed for you a whole nice list of examples to avoid and recommendations if one goes the route of registration. You noted that legal personality registration for religious community already exists, but the recommendations given here also apply to the suggested registration and licensing. The most important thing is they must be voluntary, they cannot be compulsory. One cannot criminalize religious activity that moves around the bounds, outside the bounds of registration. Just to highlight a few, no religious community should be empowered either de jure or de facto decide upon, influence or veto the registration of another religious community, and that applies to the peer review that is proposed. Registration should neither favor or a particular leader or specific organs of a divided religious community. What are you going to do with the Ahmadiyyas, where the other Muslims say, oh, they're not real Muslims? They can't fall under that supervision. Then the issue of missionary activities of foreigners or non-citizens is mentioned. The most important, again, is members of religious communities who cannot or do not wish to register should still be able to individually and collectively manifest their religion or belief. Now, if you ever should choose to go down the road that the CLR is suggesting, you can find the recommendations there, what procedures then should be adhered to. Let me move on. Just to add to the international picture, there's a very interesting international study on how the different states and nations fare concerning government restrictions of religion and social hostilities. And I just marked the BRICS countries. So South Africa is very low in government restrictions. This is the Pew report. Whereas Russia, India, and China all are very high on government restrictions of religion. You've got this graph in your appendix. So I suggest don't go down the route of Russia, India, or China, but do better. Another question, what would happen if Parliament accepts the CLR report wholesale? I foresee litigation, and if it doesn't stop at the Constitutional Court, which I think it would, it is expected that the UN Human Rights Council would condemn it. Then you have every 4 years the Universal Periodic Review, where every country is examined, and you will have to expect critical remarks. Just note, the international community is already watching you, including the UN Special Rapporteur. So, in summary, and I have given you my summarized points in writing. Freedom of thought, conscience, religion, or belief is a fundamental and protected human right. Its public manifestation may only be limited under very narrowly defined circumstances, and the state bears the burden of proof. I skip all the other points and just give the last 8. In summary, the proposed regulations severely restrict the enjoyment of freedom of thought, conscience, religion, or belief, and violate fundamental human rights. They are unjustified, unwarranted, illegitimate, discriminatory in many respects, disproportionate, unnecessary, based on flawed assumptions, unpractical, unpractical, and unfeasible. If you think these are harsh words, the previous points have elaborated on that. Short recommendations. The simple recommendation would be that the committee reject the report of the CLR Commission outright on the grounds given above, but that might be too easy. So I would you should encourage self-regulation of religious community, including developing ethics codes without intervening, controlling, or instrumentalizing. And if one looks at the recommendations the Commission gives under point 16, many seem reasonable and should be pursued. However, note that they are not dealing with compulsory registration and licensing. These recommendations can be pursued without following the suggestions for implementation that are given in point 17 and the whole package that follows thereafter. The committee may want to engage with its authority with other appropriate entities to ensure that regarding the original problem named, existing laws are applied and enforced without infringing on freedom of religion or belief. Should this portfolio committee, however, choose to follow any of the recommendations of the CLR Commission, it must ensure that it meets all the standards of the international human rights framework, particularly with regards to freedom of religion or belief, including the recommendations on how not to regulate registration, as well as the recommendations on how to devise any procedures for the acquisition of legal status. I thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you very much, Professor, for the submission. Can we invite then the Western Cape Minister?
Mr. Chair, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, thank you for this opportunity to present. My name is Gareth Stead, and I represent the Western Cape Ecumenical Network. And I'd like to, on our behalf, state three observations, then our position, and then make three simple recommendations to this committee for consideration. Let me just start by saying the Western Cape Ecumenical Network is a network that is one of the most representative bodies of the denominations and movements that represent the Christian faith in the Western Cape. Its member bodies and movements include the South African Council of Churches, its Western Cape branch, that is, which represents some 36 member denominations and organizations in South Africa, the Consultation of Christian Churches, which represents 43 denominations and church movements with an active presence in the Western Cape, the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa, again its Western Cape chapter, the South African Christian Leaders Initiative, the Great Commission Network, a network of a large number of churches in Khayelitsha and neighboring townships in Cape Town, Ecclesia, which is an ecumenical center of the Faculty of Theology at Stellenbosch University, and many independent churches that are not members of any specific denomination. Many of our member bodies have made written submissions of their own and have engaged the CRL Rights Commission hearings actively. We have studied the final reports of the CRL Rights Commission, all 64 pages of it, and note its contents and recommendations. And we wish to make the following observations, state our position, and the following recommendations. Firstly, our observations. We have three of them. Number one, we wish to acknowledge that the intentions of the CRL's investigation and subsequent report are good and noble with regard to their stated aim to promote the self-regulation of religion. Our understanding from studying the report is that the Commission wishes to create an environment where there are appropriate mechanisms to be able to address incidents of the abuse of people's belief systems, address unethical practices by religious leaders, and assist churches and religious communities to apply sound principles for corporate governance to nurture a healthy and sustainable operation of their religious bodies and organizations. Secondly, despite concerns raised by several parties to the contrary, we take note of and wish to express our appreciation for the stated commitment of the CRL Rights Commission to uphold its constitutional mandates to protect the freedom of belief, freedom of association, and protection from interference by the state when it comes to the practice of religion and the functioning of religious bodies in South Africa. Our third observation, we also note with concern the resistance and lack of cooperation shown by certain religious leaders during the CRL Rights Commission's investigation, as recorded in their report. Perhaps this was exacerbated by the unfortunate decision by the CRL to use the powers of subpoena to conduct its investigation rather than those of voluntary cooperation. Be that as it may, the lack of cooperation by certain religious leaders was regrettable. However, we were glad to see that the majority of leaders did cooperate fully. Our position then is as follows. Despite the good intentions of the CRL Rights Commission, however, we find their recommendations to amend the CRL Act No. 19 of 2002 to be both problematic and unnecessary. Firstly, we deem it to be problematic since they have the potential to cause unintended negative consequences that would open the door for state control of the licensing of ministers of religion in South Africa and therefore state interference in what ministers of religion can or cannot do or say, as you've heard from the previous speakers. Although the recommendations contained in the CRL's final report are couched in self-regulatory terms, a more careful reading makes it clear that the proposed structures are answerable to the CRL Rights Commission and that the CRL Rights Commission itself is, in their own words, the final arbiter of religion. Secondly, we also deem them to be unnecessary, since in our opinion the CRL Act empowers the CRL Rights Commission sufficiently to achieve its intended objectives and address the concerns that its investigation has highlighted. For example, the recommendation in the CRL report for the establishment of regulatory councils for each religion, clauses 36 and 37 of the CRL Act specifically speak to the recognition of community councils. And where none exist, the Act states that the Commission may recommend to a community which is not organized to initiate and establish a community council at a provincial or national level for the promotion and protection of the rights of such a community. Let me conclude, therefore, with our recommendations. We have three of them. Our first recommendation is that the Standing Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs make no changes to the CRL Act. We deem the Act to be sufficient as it stands. Secondly, that the CRL Rights Commission supports and participates in a church legislative for a national consultative conference in 2018 with the following aims. A, to foster greater mutual accountability to principles for sound corporate governance and ethical practices among ministers of religion. And B, to examine the viability of establishing an ecumenical body that could provide appropriate mechanisms to support greater corporate governance and ethical practices in churches and or denominations on a voluntary, mutually accountable, and truly self-regulatory basis in South Africa. And our final recommendation, Mr. Chair, is that if there is to be any legislation for consideration, that this committee considers preparing a motion before the National Assembly for the adoption of the South African Charter on Religious Rights and Freedoms to be adopted under Section 234 of the Constitution, which states that in order to deepen the culture of democracy established by the Constitution, Parliament may adopt charters of rights consistent with the provisions of the Constitution. This charter, as you've heard it referred to earlier today, has been endorsed by signatories from all major religions in South Africa, as well as by the CRL Rights Commission itself, and provides a foundation for the development of a code of ethics by religious communities for religious communities. Thank you for the opportunity to present, and we pray that as you deliberate further, that you'll only take those decisions that will enhance and continue to protect freedom of religion in South Africa as per the mandate of the CRL Rights Commission. We thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation on behalf of the network. Let us take the last one before discussion. Apostolic Faith Mission. Anyone? Okay. This is no one from the Apostolic Faith Mission. Can we then request Christian Ministers Council of Southern Africa, who is representing them, want to make some submission on their behalf? Okay, check their platform this side.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am Apostle Julius Moloi. I am the President of the Christian Ministers Council of Southern Africa. We are a Christian voluntary advocacy organization. We represent mostly the independent ministers and fraternals, and we also, in association with other organizations that are also represented in the House. Chair, in submitting this presentation, the CMCSA and its members and affiliates recognizes the rights, powers, and responsibility of the CRL Commission as a Chapter 9 institution to carry out its duties, obligations, and report on its activities, as outlined in Section 5, 6, 7, 8 of the CRL Act. However, we also, as the CMCSA, request that this portfolio committee take this report with a pinch of salt, if not throw it out completely, for the following reasons. One, the quality of the investigation, research, public hearing, or study, because actually the report does not clarify what was this exercise. Was it a research? Was it an investigation? Was it a study, or was it a public hearing? Therefore, what document is this? Also, when you look at page 4, section A of the report itself, it indicated that the CRL Commission acted on media reports and not necessarily on a complaint as outlined in the complaints handling procedures manual. And the CRL Commission also uses the word or the term commercialization of religion, and I think I heard you well, Chair, when you were outlining that, to say we need to talk to the point of commercialization and abuse of people's belief systems. I hope that I will get time credits for that. Yeah, they use that phrase, yet they do not clarify as to what exactly is it. What is commercialization of religion? This phrase has far more broader inclusion than what the Commission realizes, and we request that the phrase must not be associated with the Christian faith, at least. The report spends a little time outlining the commercialization aspect. They only speak about a prima facie evidence of commercialization. But if you look at the report itself, there's not much they say about what exactly is commercialization, what is being commercialized. And if you look at the broadness of the term, it speaks even to the point of, can you sell a Bible? Because then that is commercialization of religion. Can you sell a music DVD that has gospel in it? That is also commercialization of religion. So the quality of the report is actually very, very worrisome. The CRL also used the phrase abuse of people's belief systems. I think that is the title of their report. That's the first thing that you see when you look at it, which also is very broad, and the CMCA feels that the CRL does not have the necessary expertise and depth of doctrinal knowledge to highlight the dichotomy between religious practice and abuse. A more experienced and informed group of religious experts would need to engage in this exercise. Ukuthwasa, for an example, Chair, can be seen as a blatant abuse of people's belief by one and a normal practice by another. Now the question is, does the CRL Commission have got the necessary expertise to be able to clarify that point? The quality also of the approach and methodology, Chair. We feel that the Commission has created an impression, and I think the Chair has highlighted it as well, that this process has been extensively consulted and they had public hearings across the country. But as FOSA has also alluded to this, it was only 88 individuals out of the 38 million Christians or religious people in South Africa. And these participants were not actually willing participants who are coming here in a harmonious way. They were coerced and threatened by summonses and stuff. So I would think that the committee needs to also take that into cognizance when considering this report. Also, is that the heavy-handed approach of the Commission towards the religious sector has already left a bad taste and a self-inflicted hostility from the religious sector towards the CRL Commission. We cannot confidently say that this was a harmonious, willing participatory process, and therefore the findings and the recommendations based on these findings should not be accepted. You cannot coerce a person to participate in something and then you want to report on that as if the person was there to to willingly give? What if they then change their statement to say, no, I did that under pressure or under duress? So the quality of this report also is very questioned based on the methodology and the approach that they used. Currently, the CRL is engaged in court battles with the Christian leaders who are fighting for their rights to practice their faith freely. This is unprecedented, Chair, in the history of the CRL Commission. And thus, the CRL Commission has broken Section 185(1)(a) and (b) of the Constitution, which speaks about their formulation, and it highlights that they have to bring harmony, they have to bring peace within the religious sectors. Also, the Commission is mandated, or rather, the CRL is mandated by the Act to hold two consultative processes in its tenure. We know that the CRL Commission, the current sitting one, had consultative process as far as initiation schools is concerned. And there, we can also argue that there are elements of commercialization and abuse. As a matter of fact, there are fatalities there. But the process was handled respectably, very well, and the Commission spent a lot of money hosting a consultative process. They never invited media hype and tried to make the traditional initiation practices to be the laughingstock of society. Now the question is, why should we as the religious sector not be afforded the same privilege, which is the responsibility, Jay, the responsibility of the Commission? Because they have had one for initiation schools, why can't they have one for us? I think the message that is being sent across here, Chair, is that we are not happy with the quality of the report, the recommendations based on the investigation, research, study, or whatever that they call this document, because we actually don't know what it is. So we were saying, Chair, that if we could have that, I'm trying to shorten my statement, Chair, so that I don't repeat what has already been said for the sake of time. Now, I would like to come to the point of that certain point that I would like the Commission, the House to take, to pay attention to when you are considering this. If you look at page 4 again, of the report, it says that when you look at paragraph 3, because the funny part is that they never even numbered the report correctly so that you can make reference to it, and I think maybe that was strategic, I'm not sure, but fine. On paragraph 3, Chair, it says the CRL Rights Commission is of the view that there are several reasons for the religious sector to be regulated. That's paragraph 3, page 4, and which is a page after the table of contents. So from the onset, they are indicating that they want the religious sector to be regulated. And therefore, after this extensive investigation, I'm continuing with what they wrote, an amendment to the Promotion and Protection of the CRL Rights Act should be recommended. This will assist the religious institution to create an environment where they, and not the state, can effectively regulate themselves and hold the people who bring religion into dispute accountable as per their various religions. This is what they say to you, because they are reporting to you. But that is not the truth. That's what they put forward, to say they want us to regulate it. But that's not the truth, and I think some of the colleagues that have presented here have highlighted that. I would think as well, Chair, is that we should also take into cognizance that the CRL Commission's main intention is to have themselves empowered so that they can control religion. And I want to reemphasize that fact to say this is not self-regulation at all. It is state control of religion. Without trying to reiterate what the other colleagues have already presented, I would like also to draw our attention to page 47 of the report of the CRL Commission, when they talk about the peer review committee. And I think that other colleagues have highlighted, but for the sake of emphasis, I would like to repeat that as well. And I think that the peer review committee, this is what they say, peer review committee shall be an advisory body to the CRL Act. That is taking away the power of the peer review committee, Chair. So if then the peer review committee becomes an advisory body, it says the final decision powers shall lie with the CRL Rights Commission. So, and they are making a provision to say if a religious sector or the peer review committee or anybody wants to challenge what the CRL Commission is saying, then we must be engaged in an expensive legal process or a court battles. And they know well that we don't have the money, though they make an impression that the religious sector has got millions and millions, but we don't have the money to be able to be engaged in court battles like that. Page 19.4 of the report, the CRL Rights Commission, as a juristic person and a constitutional body, will remain the final arbiters in all the matters as recommended by the peer review committee and the peer review council. This is me quoting from what they wrote. So maybe the intention here of the CMCSA is to try to highlight that on page 4 they say one thing so that they can create an impression that they are empowering us, but when you look at the content of the report, there is nothing like that. And I would like the committee to also take that into consideration. This is our proposal, Chair, as I'm drawing to a conclusion. We request, therefore, because we have already highlighted that it is part of the CRL's mandate. It is part of their founding principles to make sure that there is a consultative process. Remember, even when budget is being considered for a CRL commission, part of the reasons is that they must have consultation processes. Now, we are requesting that be afforded to the Christian, to the religious sector. I'm sorry, I will always be saying Christian because that's where I'm coming from. So we would like that this report must not be accepted until that consultation process has been engaged in. We want to work with the CRL Commission, Chair. We want to assist. We also are taking cognizance of all the things that the CRL Commission have noted, though we don't think they are as severe as they want to make it to be, because it is focus of incidents. And even today, the CRL Commission has failed to convince even one institution of law to take action against anybody to that effect. Therefore, we request that a proper consulted process must be engaged in, and then after that, can the CRL Commission bring that report to you. We also request, Chair, and I know that I'm taking a risk here, but let's hear it. We request to, through the Access of Information Act, Chair, that COGDA must publish the process and the steps followed in appointing the commissioners, because we want to be conversant with that process. Why, I will tell you, Chair, is because the current chairperson of the CRL Commission used to be an employee of the commission. And the provisions in the CRL Act request that we, as linguistic religious communities, must make nomination. Now, if we can understand the procedure, because we don't really know, I don't know if there's somebody sitting here who knows how the commissioners get appointed. I don't know, and I would like to know. So I would request this House to assist us in accessing that information to make sure that we know for sure that the process was a fair one, and we also want to know how did the chairperson become a commissioner from being an employee of the commission, because the provisions request the minister to advertise and let the affected communities first make a recommendation, make nominations, and then COGDA then will make recommendations and the president will appoint. Through that, Chair, I want to say I thank you.
Thank you very much, Pastor. Thank you very much, Pastor. Can we request South African Institute of Professional Pastors, Reverends and Ministers, who is representing the team, any submission from there?
Oh, it's you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. No, but you have done it already.
Yes, you've done it already.
Mloy, no.
Time is up.
No, Mloy. Oh, we are twice. Okay, two in one, and wow. That's good. Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. No, no, but we are going to engage, and then we'll have some discussion on some of the issues that you're raising. Okay. All African Federation of Chess. Yeah. Who is available to assist us? Baba, what's an Afrikaan? But the self-regulation, it seems we support.
Yes, sir, 100%.
100%. Okay. Reverend Masibe.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Chair. My name is Archbishop Nchime Tsekedi. I'm the president of All African Federation of Churches, representing African indigenous churches, the Zionists, the Apostles, the Charismatic churches, those who worship under the trees, those who are in their dining rooms, in the school classrooms. You know, I'm representing a large number of millions of South Africans. And first of all, Chair, I won't do much, but I would like to introduce the Secretary of AAFC, Mr. Mdonga, to do the presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I observe all protocol on that. I'm not going to waste time. First, I think it is very important that we deal with the silent issues. The report from the CRL is purported to be based on public hearings and extensive consultations that purportedly happened. They did not happen. I just want to start off on that note to say what happened was after the preliminary findings were published, then they did an exercise to sanitize the process, which was obviously so flawed. We as the AFC have stood up and we recognize and we acknowledge this committee here that we're presenting today as our last hope to be heard, because we have made numerous attempts, including submitting and getting a petition signed by 20,000 people, rejected outright. And there was sensationalization of our protestations, which were numerous. And we were saying more than 2 million people should matter to democracy in South Africa. Our views need to be heard. This is the very first opportunity for us to be heard by an institution which we trust will take on board our serious concerns with the process followed by the CRL, which we view to be extremely biased and targeted at us. So to start with, if you look at their sampling technique came out with 70% of the people who were forced and intimidated and terrified with the fear of God to appear before them were from Pentecostal independent churches. But that is not representative of the demographics of Christianity in South Africa. We are saying outright and with conviction as Christians that if this report were to be adopted, that would be a threat to democracy and the reform of religion in South Africa altogether. How is it that a parliamentary committee is presented with a report based on findings drawn from some 85 people out of more than 40 million people who believe in a religion in South Africa? And if you were to do any statistics on the 85 people, what would they ever mean to anyone? So it is our view that there must be no report presented to this committee because this study was fatally flawed. We only have 10 minutes, and 10 minutes is not enough for us to start looking at the quality issues of the report. The CRL keeps on saying they didn't want to waste money. The report itself was a terrible waste of taxpayers' money. The way it is written is so shoddy and shabby, I can say with conviction again that it is the worst report ever to be presented to a parliamentary committee. The typos are numerous. They are innumerable. The grammar is wrong. The structure is wrong. The hypotheses are not tested at all.
Thank you very much for that. The thing is, I speak from the heart because this affects our lives as 2 million people.
Okay. Now, if you look at one of the hypotheses or one of the issues that they had to investigate was, they said that they wanted to understand how and how come that there was such deep societal thinking that allowed people to be gullible and to be abused. And they went to traditional healers and African religion and asked questions about the history of traditional religion. And they asked questions about relationships between traditional healers and other organizations. How does that answer anything? The study investigated leaders. It did not go to the communities. The leaders were the accused here. The perception was that leaders abuse people's faith. And then it is the leaders who are interviewed. How then would you get to the bottom of it if you don't go to the communities themselves and ask questions? The summonsing process that was followed was again illegal. In our view, it is unconstitutional. It is an affront to democracy in that it was designed to intimidate and harass and scare people. Now, when there were court cases that forced the CRL to review that process of getting people to their hearings, they called them hearings and appearances and interviews. There was such a mishmash of terms used. When there was that court hearing, the CRL did make a public apology. But they did not reverse the process for those who had appeared already under duress. So their input can therefore not be meaningful. In the end, we end up with less than 85 people who represented a fraternity of 40 million people in South Africa. The study, in our view, became an academic exercise. It looked like the CRL had a preconceived model that they wanted to implement, and they were going to implement it anyway. They were going to recommend it anyway, despite anything that they came across, despite any opposition that they confronted. So to us, it gives us challenges and problems. Now, they also said that they wanted religious leaders to present to them their finances, the finances of their churches. We say that is a no-go area. Legal people, and I'm not one of them, say it is ultra vires. I'm sure I'm pronouncing correctly. It is out of bounds entirely. And even the South African religious charter that my colleague earlier spoke about emphasizes that as one of the most important provisions of the freedom of churches as NPOs in South Africa. The finances of NPOs should be governed and monitored by SARS, not by a commission. There is also a lot of bias in their intention. It is clear that the intention of the CRL is not what they stated on paper because of these disconnects. First, on section 14, or was it item 14.2 of the report, they say this was not intended to regulate religion, but rather to get rid of those people who are seen to be bringing religion into disrepute in South Africa. How does a state institution get rid of people? What does that mean? What should we expect as targets of this commission. Now, the process also that they followed, they started off by investigating with the preconceived idea that if they consult, people refuse to come. I wonder where that came from. Because religious leaders always want to talk and discuss. There's so many platforms and so many forums. But they say even in their introduction that in the face of these impediments, and they haven't spoken about impediments anyway, in the face of these impediments, we decided to summon people. It is a fatal flaw. It shows preconceived ideas that destroyed anything that you can call a study or an investigation. So they went the route of investigate and recommend. There was no consultation in between. So this is a recommendation by them about them, not about the religious community of South Africa. They go on and say that they want to stipulate licensing and all these accreditation of places and centers of worship. They want to stipulate the institutionalization or the starting of review committees and say we are not regulating. I wonder what dictionary that comes from. Because regulation means instructing, directing, and then monitoring something. So they literally, for all intents and purposes, are going to be regulating religion in South Africa if this act or this amendment goes through. Finally, we want to say we have lost trust and confidence in the commission because of the behavior of the people on the commission. We saw, you know, such heavy-handedness. Somebody said that. I wanted to use a harsher term. I don't want to. But there was so much heavy-handedness. There was so much sensationalization. There was so much demonization of certain people who were targeted by the CRL. We cannot believe in any of the processes that they undertake regarding this matter because we see that this investigation was all over the place. The intention on paper was to investigate commercialization and abuse of religious faith. But then suddenly they start looking at the proliferation of the number of churches in South Africa. That's got nothing to do with commercialization. They haven't put out a hypothesis saying those two are related. They start looking at foreign-based churches coming into South Africa. All the mainstream churches came from somewhere outside the country, many years during colonialization. So there's no church that is not foreign. Okay. So we're also saying that the laws of this country as they exist today are sufficient to deal with the problems that have been identified. There are laws that govern advertising. There are laws that govern advertising standards. Yes, there is abuse. We've observed that. Yes. But we're saying there are laws that pertain to each of the specific incidents that are cited. Okay. So there are laws that govern advertising and ethics in that area. There are laws that govern financial management and so forth. There are laws that govern crime, fraud, illegal immigration. The non-profit organization regulations, we looked at them. They have all the provisions that would answer all the issues that CRL is worried about governance structures of NPOs, about their reporting relationship with SARS and so forth. All of those are in there. There is no need to convolute the legal system in South Africa by adding anything else. I want to make recommendations very quickly. I'm realizing that I have really cruised through this. Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much. We want to recommend to the committee here to reject the report outright. We want to recommend to the commission to also revisit the issue of the consultation of religious institutions, perhaps to come up with another entity that will bring objectivity into the whole process so that we feel that it has been inclusive. We also want to say and state categorically that we want to be consulted, not to be directed. To us, that is the meaning of democracy since 1994. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ramsan, for the presentation.
I'm filling in.
Thank you, Bishop. Can we invite the Assemblies of God? Assemblies of God.
Thank you so much for allowing us this time, and to the committee, thank you very much. I'm Charles Peter Watt. I am chairman of the Assemblies of God in South Africa, and I want to thank you for this hearing, because it has been perhaps the most educational moment of my life, with brilliant minds, incisive thinking. I'm not a lawyer, so I have been very impressed with all the lawyers. Wonderful. And I want to say that every input that we've had thus far, I think I can speak for the Assemblies of God, we're in full support of everything that has been said to this moment. For me, my input is very short. There were procedural problems right from the start. The Assemblies of God is a large and well-known denomination in South Africa. It's not as large as others, but it has been here for 100 years, more than 100 years, and yet we were not approached by the CRL. I've checked around. We were not approached. I went to all our major officials, and they had no idea of this. The commission, we were approached, or we approached the commission for our comments and input when they put their recommendations together about getting abusive church leaders under control. And our concern is that when the final report came out, it really seems as though they took no advice from well-established denominations with long and positive track records in the South African story. What was put forward at the first seemed to just reappear in Parliament. When asked for comment, our comments, I think, were ignored. There were also factual problems. The claim of support for these millions of people of faith is unsubstantiated. The claim that TISA, and they will speak for themselves, and the SACC support the recommendations of the report is not so. There are practical problems in what is being proposed. Licensing places of worship, this has been worked out. It's unworkable, because you're cutting across what the church is. It'll never work if people can meet under trees or in lounges of flats or wherever, or in the street. You cannot make this happen. Licensing religious teachers and ministers, unworkable. It cuts across what the church is, what happens to people when they become people of faith in the Lord Jesus. They become sharers of their faith. You cannot license them. You will never license them. Unworkable. It can be likened to making law for the wind. The wind will just blow anyway. For 2,000 years that wind has been blowing. And the people of faith who are here I speak as a Christian, they will understand what I mean by the wind. It blows anyway. And so what is proposed by the CRL, I think, really strikes at the heart of the church as the body of Christ. Those who are abusers of people of faith, it has been said again and again, they can be dealt with by other existing law. What will happen if what you are putting forward lands up as law in this country? It's going to, the implications are dire and detrimental to freedom of religion. And we foresee unintended consequences to the freedoms of all faiths to express their beliefs, exposing followers of various faiths to legal action and the unnecessary criminalization of good people. It's what happens in Russia and China, as has been said. Legal opinion is that there is enough existing law to protect people against the crimes of abuse, making it superfluous to add further law to our legal framework. Furthermore, legal opinion states it would be an act of folly to further burden our statute books with this bill, if it becomes a bill. We therefore ask that the whole recommendation of the CRL Commission be dropped. Our concern is that there is a creeping intervention of the state into the affairs of religious organizations, and that this intervention is driven by highly publicized instances of the bad behavior of certain individuals that are not representative of the huge majority of people of faith. There are well-established and responsible structures amongst the religious community, and we've met with some of them here today, that can meet to find ways to deal with abuse of people seeking hope and help through faith. So in this room, there is a broad representation of the Church of Jesus Christ. Not one of them is happy. Not one. We ask that you hear us. And whether, even though this is not officially a hearing, please do not ignore what we are saying here today, because law will not stop the wind blowing. I thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. May I request the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa make a presentation. After this presentation, we'll open for questions, discussions, some proposals broadly. We break for lunch at 1. 1:30 we are back, then we continue. Members of Parliament who post questions. There are members of Parliament also who are here, not necessarily members of the committee, but as members of Parliament, they don't make their input, they will assist on some of the issues. I think we are going to have a very fruitful discussion. Evangelica, you want to make a presentation? You are not covered.
Honorable Chairperson and...
Not covered.
Not covered.
Ah!
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the COPTA Portfolio Committee, my name is Teresa Conradi. I'm an attorney in private practice. I also currently serve as the chairperson of the Global Council of Advocates International and the Secretary General of Advocates Africa, both international and continental networks of Christian lawyers. But I make my presentation on behalf of the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa, TISA, which is a network representing 4 million evangelical Christians in South Africa. TISA is an associate member of the South African Council of Churches and affiliated to the Association of Evangelicals in Africa, as well as to the World Evangelical Alliance, which is home to 650 million Christians worldwide. TISA has properly considered the report of the CRL Rights Commission and regard the investigation and the report as a bona fide attempt to address very important matters regarding religion. The report highlighted various issues, which are also of great concern to TISA, and which should be of concern to all religious communities in South Africa. While there is sufficient self-regulation within church denominations and associations of churches, TISA acknowledges that there is currently concern in respect of self-regulation of non-denominational and independent churches. The concerns which have been raised in the report and which TISA wishes to address are practices that are potentially harmful, dangerous, unethical, which we refer to as abuses, the perceived inadequacy of existing legislation, and the lack of implementation of legislation and prosecution of offenders. The report not only highlighted many instances of such abuses, but there has also been sufficient evidence in the media of abuses by religious practitioners. TISA emphatically condemns these abuses, particularly as there is no biblical basis on which these can be justified. It is important, though, that abuses conducted by religious practitioners are not seen in isolation from similar abuses by other persons who are in positions of trust. These would include, amongst others, rogue traditional healers who encourage people to eat human flesh, the so-called love life consultants, fortune tellers, illegal abortionists, designers of pyramid schemes, and the like. TISA is of the firm belief that the mere risk of losing your status as a licensed or registered practitioner will not deter these delinquents from engaging in such behavior, and that these abuses should be dealt with by the authorities created by law for this purpose. It can be deducted from the report that the CRL Rights Commission has concluded that current legislation is inadequate to effectively deal with and prosecute these offenders. TISA is of the view that there has not been sufficient research done in this regard, and that it might be that additional legislation will not be required, and that the amendment or the enhancement of existing legislation may suffice. TISA wishes to submit that this cannot be determined in the absence of in-depth research into existing legislation, which would include acts such as the Criminal Procedure Act, the Financial Intelligence Center Act, the Companies Act, the Income Tax Act, the Advertising Standards Authority legislation, the Consumer Protection Act, the Nonprofit Organization Act, the Immigration Act, the Banks Act, and the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. The next concern, which shows from the report, is poor corporate governance and financial management. TISA further acknowledges that some non-denominational and independent churches may have limited or no form of corporate governance or financial management. These include instances where churches have no founding documents or banking accounts, and the leaders of the churches are the de facto owners of the church. There are also instances where churches are not tax compliant and do not adhere to the provisions of FICA legislation. At the same time, it is conceivable that there are many small independent churches with limited financial means whose freedom of religion, as well as their rights to form religious associations as provided for in Section 31 of the Constitution, will be severely hampered by cumbersome requirements of corporate governance or registration in any manner. TISA is therefore of the view that these shortcomings can only be addressed if the approach is not a one-size-fits-all. TISA is in favor of the church community in South Africa collectively developing training courses which are also made available online with the aim to teach the basic principles of corporate governance and financial management. Course content could include the formation of proper forms of enterprise such as voluntary associations, trusts, non-profit companies, the minimum requirements for proper founding documents such as constitutions, trusts, deeds and memoranda of incorporation, opening and management of banking accounts and financial accountability to the members of churches, registration as non-profit organizations with the Department of Social Development, registration with SARS as public benefit organization, obtaining the necessary exemption and achieving tax compliance, financial accounting and reporting. In this view that TISA had, the focus is on education and not on compliance. The next concern that there was is the lack of standardized qualification of religious practitioners. While TISA does not believe that there should be a minimum requirement for qualifications prescribed, it supports the work done by the Association of Christian Religious Practitioners in developing qualification standards which religious practitioners can voluntarily pursue. In its reading of the report, TISA could not determine whether the CRL Rights Commission had made any inquiries whatsoever or done any research into international best practice. TISA is of the view that much can be gained by a thorough investigation into legislation relating to the management, regulation, organizing of religion in other countries, particularly other sub-Saharan African countries where the Christian faith is predominant. These could, amongst others, include countries such as Ghana, Botswana, Uganda, Kenya, Nigeria, Ethiopia, Zambia, the Cameroon, Angola, and Rwanda. Religious freedom and the autonomy of the church, in conclusion. For TISA, it is of the utmost importance for this Honorable Portfolio Committee to appreciate the magnitude of this task at hand. There are at least 40 million people in South Africa who call themselves Christians. These Christians are organized in a broad range of different doctrinal beliefs, leadership structures, religious practices, ways and means of worshiping and teaching. It is in fact impossible to be able to accurately define who can be called a Christian or what can be called a Christian church. It is therefore inconceivable that a simple solution can be designed which will address all of the concerns raised in the report. Given the above, it is near impossible to imagine a body of church leaders which would not only be representative of this diversity, but also to which the broad spectrum of churches would be prepared to submit. TISA is opposed to any form of control from the state or its functionaries. It would, in TISA's view, greatly threaten not only religious freedom, but also the autonomy of churches. TISA would instead request the committee for the opportunity for the church in the broad sense of the word to get its own house in order and demonstrate that it's able to regulate itself. I thank you, Chi.
Thank you very much for this presentation. members and platform is open. Honorable Melham.
Chair, I've got a couple of questions. Chair, the first one goes to the South African Council for Religious Rights and Freedom, and it revolves around their charter. I'm not sure. There you are, sir. I just glanced through the list of organizations that have ascribed to that charter, and I'm very impressed at the diversity of that. What is the legal status of the charter, and what steps have you taken to have it adopted by Parliament in terms of Section 234 of the Constitution? That's my first question. My second question goes to the comment goes to the All African Federation of Churches. And there was a lot of commentary around the rights of the CRL to summons, the legality of the CRL to issue a summons, that it indicated some form of bias, etc., that there was that it was an investigation, and the caliber of the report. And in fact, I think that the other one who raised this was the Christian Ministers Council of South Africa, the quality of the reporting. Now, in terms of the Constitution and in terms of the CRL Act, it's very specific that the CRL has the power to investigate and to report. So they can ask you, how do you spend your money? They can ask you, what are your religious practices? That's their job. It's in the Act. It's in the Constitution. But more specifically, and this goes to the All African Federation of Churches, they have the power to summons anyone in writing to appear before them. They do have that power. There was some information that people were reluctant to come to the committee, and as a result, to the commission, and as a result, summons were issued, and as a further consequence, they then ended up taking those people to court. But I think to challenge this report from a legal perspective on the basis of their power to investigate, their power to make a recommendation, their power to summons anyone, I think you're barking up the wrong tree. I think that we need to deal with the issues here, and I'd ask all the presenters that still have to come to focus on whether or not this is a desirable state of affairs. In other words, whether or not we should be regulating religion, taking steps against the commercialization of religion. Let's put aside the way the investigation was conducted and focus on the issue here, which is the commercialization and abuse of people's faith. I think that is, for now, the only question I have. I just want to see my notes here. Let's leave it at that for now, Chair. But I really would like an answer from the Council for Religious Rights and Freedom. Thank you.
Chair, thank you for that question. I didn't get the gentleman's name, but I would like to respond to his question. What is the legal position of the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms? In the introductory paragraph to the Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms, we made the following note, and I think that to a large extent will answer your question, although I think something else just has to be added. We write there, the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms is subject to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The Charter builds upon and relies on several provisions of the Bill of Rights as entrenched in the Constitution. In terms of Section 234 of the Constitution, which allows for additional charters of rights consistent with the Constitution, the Charter describes in more detail Section 15(1) of the Bill of Rights, and then we continue to set out the Charter. Yes, we would be very grateful if Parliament would decide to accept the Charter as part of the constitutional structure of South Africa. But we are also wary, Mr. Chair, that we do not want to bring the Charter to Parliament so as to give it into the hands of Parliament and that they then can control all religion in South Africa. This Charter is a product that comes from the religions, and not only the Christian religion, the Jewish religion, the Muslim religion, the African indigenous religions. They were all part of this Charter, and it has to come from them, and they present it. And it has, I'm always surprised at how wide in South Africa this Charter is already accepted. If we can find a way that Parliament will take official notice of this charter. I think that will give us a very firm foundation in South Africa. Because if there are changes to be made, we are open to anybody to come to us and say, we suggest this and that. But it will be for the religions to decide whether that is acceptable for them. And in a certain sense, the report of the CRL Commission tries to come forward and say, this is how religion must be structured in South Africa. We say no. The religions themselves must decide how they want to be structured. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you for your answer, sir. Just a very quick point. If I understand you correctly, you're saying that as the charter currently exists, it has no legal status whatsoever. In other words, it is not binding on the signatories. There is no legal consequences if someone does not abide by that charter.
Professor Malherbe will also answer to that question. Let me just say that we've been advised that if churches and religious bodies endorse the charter and they make it part of their official documentation, that in any court case that comes forward, the court will have to take notice of what is written in this charter. So, yes, but perhaps Professor Malherbe can answer that even better than I.
Thank you, Chair, with your permission. Yes, I think Professor Kurten said it. What we think from religious side is that the charter has persuasive power, and even in a court of law, courts will take judicial notice of it. And we feel from religion side that maybe that's enough.
It will be a bonus if Parliament endorses.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation by different church association or bodies. You know, I don't know whether, as we are represented here, we agree to what the intention was for the CRL, because the chairperson was keeping on saying this thing when presenters were coming forth, that the intention of the CRL is to ensure that there is no commercialization of churches or religion, and there is no abuse of people's beliefs. I don't know whether, as we are here, we believe that such things, they are happening. And if they are happening, what is it that we can do to ensure that people's beliefs, they are not taken for granted? People are not given rest to it. They are not given hell to it, so that they are told that they are going to be healed. I don't want to be seen as maybe looking down at Christian values. You know, if you blaspheme the religion, sometimes it's not good. But we are confronted with things that are happening nowadays, which are not good. And if you look at them, they are not, I'm not sure whether they are religious or they are Christians. But for me, to say a person, if you eat a hare, then I'll be healed. I don't know. Maybe by my belief, I will be healed. But are we not taking for granted the vulnerability of our people? What is it, as the church body, as the Christian body, as the religious people, we can do to ensure that these people, they are not taken for granted? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, the church community. You know, I'm such a dear chair listening and now trying to interrogate the report, or revisiting the report, you know, psychologically. And I'm thinking that the representative from the church community agree at some intentions of the, you know, of the commission. For example, like, you know, trying to prevent commercialization of faith and prohibiting some actions that happen through the name of the church. I think they agree on that one. But I think somewhere along the line, what they don't agree with is that the majority of them were never consulted. And that they themselves, in seeing some of the activities that are happening throughout the country, have got suggestions. And I'm not sure whether it will be possible, Chair, to create or to afford a further platform to engage on these issues that they are raising. Because I believe that we are really not, if it's a good statement, we are really not in a rush. Although some of the, you know, individuals might be continuing to do what we intend to prohibit, but also maybe rushing, you know, things might put us in trouble. I just wanted to actually suggest that we afford another opportunity. But of course, you know, listening to them, because listening is very important. And I would like to appreciate, Chair, the opportunity that the committee has presented. Although this is not a public hearing per se, but just to give, you know, them a chance to say something or present themselves. I think it was quite, you know, an eye-opener at some stage. I know I've not been here for a week or so, and the decision to actually invite them was taken when I was not here. But I've quite benefited, and I'm just suggesting that we afford another opportunity, you know, for them to make presentations. Like you say, you can see, Chair, there are lawyers in the church. When they caught sections, there are some sections that I had to go through my phone, you know, and check in the constitution and start, you know, assisting myself with. So you can see that God is really assisting the church, you know, to fight this matter. They say. So perhaps finding, you know, a common ground, because I think really not to the colleagues from the church community. I don't think, as the chairperson repeatedly says, that, you know, the aim of this was actually to prevent one or two things. But maybe the commission might have, you know, overlapped, I don't know, to some extent. But I'm suggesting that we get another chance for the church community to actually present themselves in the commission. Thank you very much.
Comrade Chair, thanks. I want also to take this opportunity that we were blessed by these religious communities just to make their presentation, so that for us as member of parliament, to understand their frustration, to understand their views on that matter. However, Chair, according to the findings of the CRL, this abuse have taken place in different areas in our country. You know, like spraying with using doom and so on and so on. And my view also, I think we are still going to meet as a committee. There's a lot of frustration out there amongst religious people.
I think the manner in which the CRL have done consultation and so on. I will also agree with my colleague that maybe if the process can be started afresh, and it's not a decision, that's my view, so that everybody become embraced with their view, you know, because other presentation have also indicated that they make recommendation, but they don't see their recommendation in the report of the CRA. Now, which I think is not fair, I'm not so sure. But lastly, I will also make an appeal to all you religious leaders that you normally, that's our understanding, we are dealing with a spiritual thing. That's my understanding, irrespective of whether you're Christian, Muslim, and so on. You whatever we are saying, I think that they should build us, you know, other than to criticize. I also too want you to take into account that in terms of these findings, this abuse does not emanate from inequality, unemployment. And poverty in this country. I'm just asking. I think we need to reflect on that also, so that when you are going forward, you know, we are able to answer some of this question and so on. Now, I understand with the regulation and so disclosing finances, I think that these are some of the matters that can be discussed at a later stage. But I think we need to refrain and restructure our discussion as to we started there, we start there, until so that all of us were on board. Thanks very much.
No, thanks, Chair. For me, I think we have achieved our objectives. Our objective, Chair, is simple. I hear all the other concerns that have been raised, but the fundamental point here is the abuse, of which all the speakers that have spoken this morning have ensured that they've agreed with that. I think if we can just pull, all of us just sit back, let's only concentrate there, because I also take exception, Chair, that wrong and wrong doesn't make it right. You know, challenging credentials for members of the commission, I don't think that is correct. If whoever wanted any information, that information is the public information, you can get it any time. Anyway, even in the it's even documented, Chair. But for me, is that we are also, you must also understand that we are also members, Christian, and members of the church while you're sitting here. We are looking at this thing with a clear objective view. What you need to do, just empower us that when we are dealing with this matter, we are ensure that every aspect that has been raised is get captured and is debated accordingly. We are not just thumbs up when issues of this nature have come on up front. I think all of you also have condemned what is happening. And you will see that, you will notice that, Chair, all those that are doing that are not in this hall. And those are the people that you are chasing them even to court, because they don't want to comply to anything. Even I suspect that even their Bibles are not the Bible that you are reading. Because if they are reading the same Bible that you are dealing with, all of you that are here, particularly those that have presented, I don't think that they should have been doing what they are doing. So I think then the government got a fiduciary duty to ensure that these things must find a way to address it. Not that we want to regulate the churches and all those things, no, but surely I thought maybe one day we must see this video. of what is happening outside there, actually. That's what concerns us. It's not about all the other these other issues. I think you must we also concern, Chair, the ways that funds are collected in these churches and get abused. Mm. And see that it's not about anything that's got Christianity on the issue. It's about certain people that are scammed. These scams that are alive, that we wanted to deal with, the alive scam. Not necessary that we want to deal with churches, who we are to deal with that. So I just wanted to clarify that, only that point, Chair, that it must not be taken for granted that people who are members of communities or members of parliament are not and they don't attend to these matters. But we are not going to keep quiet as well when we see these scams that are alive on a daily basis happening in front of our nation. And those are the people that also want to emphasize, Chair, that we are not going to get them anywhere except in their space. Mm. When you get into that space, then they will ensure that they insult you, they do all sorts of things. Those are the people I'm sure we are not defending. All of us here, we are not defending them. If we are not, let's ensure that how do we separate them and remove them amongst us. That is the only thing that we wanted to look into it in terms of this bill. It's not about, I will tell you, all these old churches that have been there, none of them, I was just listening, the old one, none of them have raised something differently. Because they knew they have been there, were born, they were there. Some of them, they've got 100 years, more than 100 years. And all these foreign tendencies was not there. Eating frogs, snake, and grasses, and drinking petrol, and other things. I'm not attacking those that are doing that amongst you, priests here. Even if you are doing that. But there is nobody that is meant to drink petrol. Mm. Nobody that must be allowed to drink petrol. It's only a car that must drink petrol, not a human being. Thank you, Chair.
Colleagues, let me take Reverend Mishra, take the gentleman at the back, take the gentleman here, Evan Sanda will come in. And then that them are the last one. Dademi.
Thank you, Chairperson. You must please indulge with me if I ask a question that has been asked already, because I do attend to something else. I'm going to ask a few questions to different presenters. And as I ask the questions, I want everybody to know that I am a pastor. I am concerned about freedom of religion, freedom to preach whatever I want to preach. So I want to give that basis so that when I ask a question, I'm not misunderstood. I just need clarity on some statements that have been made. The first one, to Fossa, they spoke about the need for a national conference of religious leaders that should be convened. Is there such a forum? This is my first question. Secondly, when would they convene to look into these issues that are of concern to us as Christians, and what advice or suggestion do they have of how to stop the abuses that are taking place? And to ACRP, my question is, should the National Qualification Act be applied to churches also? And in so doing, are they saying all churches should be registered? Because there are some that are querying and rejecting that. So I want to know whether they are saying churches should be registered, and should they all be, the application of National Qualification Act should be applied to them. Number three, Professor Mahebe, you said there are less restrictive ways of dealing with the problems that are facing the country. I'm not sure whether you are aware of what is happening, particularly in the townships. We are embarrassed. And sometimes we are sickened by some of the abuses that are taking place.
And obviously we are looking for solutions. We are looking for answers. They have to be stopped. So what are the less restrictive ways that is referring to, particularly when you have people that are abusing women? There are cases where pastors are putting tongues in women in the church, and when their husbands see that, then there's a problem at home. So it's not a problem that is confined to the church itself, but there are problems that are dealt with by the husbands who are very upset by what some leaders are doing. To Professor Sauer, you said one cannot criminalize a religious practice that is done voluntarily. When the issue of drinking petrol started, I met with the human rights commissioners to look into what can be done. And the chairman of the commission, Advocate Moshwana, said to me that they have tried to open cases against such pastors. But they were told that because some of the people who are drinking petrol are saying it was our choice to drink petrol, what do you do in such a case? And we're told also by some policemen and women, that they went to hospital to try and take statements from people that were hospitalized because of the abuses. And some of them, some victims, who said, it is my body, leave me alone. So how do you solve a problem like this when even the police are unable to get statements from people who have been abused? And lastly, maybe for now, to my neighbor here. Christian Ministers Council of Southern Africa. We ask questions about commercialization of religion. My question on that is, should people who are selling water, oil, and garments in the churches pay tax? If yes, are you in essence saying they must all be registered? And if they are not registered, how would the taxmen be aware of the activities? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Mudakan. I was here on the...
Your indulgence, sir. Okay. Okay, can I just rephrase my question, my last question? If they are registered, should they be registered as an NPO? Or how should churches be registered? Because NPO stands for non-profit organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I was saying we made our presentation on the 27th of June. My name is Thibabone Lijade. I'm Chairperson of Church Leaders Empowerment Foundation Africa, abbreviated CLEFA. It's an organization of independent churches. I just want to clarity in that this report was on commercialization of religious and abuse of people's beliefs. But when you look at the report, the heading should be changed to commercialization of Christianity and abuse of Christian beliefs, because we do not see, even in the videos or in the research, Sangomas telling a person drink this mixture which was not researched in any laboratory, and you are charged 2,000 rand for something that probably can cost 20 rand. We do not see it there. We do not see any report outside Christianity. And I think the report is slightly biased against Christianity. And the other thing that I'm seeing, and let me declare that I do not give my church member, I'm also a pastor, I do not give my church member petrol, doom, and whatever. And for few naughty boys, sorry to use the word boys, I know it's not parliamentarily, to be doing those kind of things, and all of us, I think one speaker spoke, and we quarantine the whole religion, and we are all put in one basket, whereas in doctors, we have bogus doctors. We do not quarantine all the doctors. We have bogus lawyers. We do not quarantine all the lawyers. We've got bogus honorable members of parliament, and we do not
quarantine all members of parliament, including ministers and presidents. Now what I'm saying is the solution that is suggested is not practical according to my understanding. There is an on the layer of the organigram, there is what you call a peer review committee. And I'm told the peer review committee will consist leaders from different umbrella bodies, of, especially in the Christian sector. Now, if we look at how many umbrella organizations do we have in South Africa, that committee will sit only at FNB. I don't think Cape Town Stadium will be able to deal with that. And again, how do you bring to order a guy who is giving people petrol legally? Because he will quote Jesus taking mud and putting it in the eyes of, remember, I don't do that, in the mud of a blind person and say, go and wash in the, that is ridiculous. Saying to Nehemiah, Elisha saying to Nehemiah, go and jump seven times in the sea and come up. It sounds very ridiculous to say to people, drink this wine is my blood. It sounds like abuse. And this is my body, which is given to many. So we cannot understand the Christian faith legally, because it's not legal. It's a spiritual connection. So I would suggest that a more thorough investigation be done, and let the leaders of this religion be consulted, and let it not be biased. There is a lot of abuse in beliefs. I went to them, what you call initiation school. It's called Murundu. I went there. I didn't read about it when I was a boy of 13. There's a lot of abuse there. And had I been consulted, I was going to come with my own option. And we are told to believe this will work, and we drink some herbs and whatever, which were not even proven in any laboratory. So my suggestion is that let the portfolio committee allow the CRL to do thorough consultation with the relevant people before it can be adopted. So my fear, which I've already expressed also to the CRL, is it's easy to pass legislation now and not see the loopholes, and you think you have closed every day. I think there are organizations which are struggling to remove their leaders because of the constitution they made when there were no problems. Yeah. And when we will be having problems, maybe the people who put this law will not be there, and 80% of South Africa, which is Christian, will be told, you cannot go and testify. Jesus said, go ye into all the world. That is one-on-one. If my church member tells them to go and preach the gospel, they will need a license. Thank you, Chairperson.
After lunch, with addressing the real question that worries everyone, not in terms of your doctrine, no one really, is your business. The issue that we must just try to address, you can't have a state anywhere in the world that can't protect the most vulnerable. You can't have a state that says it's free for all, you can do whatever you like under the sun, even the most vulnerable people should be abused. And leaders of religion come and say, no, leave it. They will change as they move on. We know how many people are abused using religion, using all these things. It's not something that we are talking about every time. And then the point that Mtet was raising, that some of the abusers are not here, but they use religion to do so. Of course, I agree with Nyang as a sense of Yaronas. Now, those abusers, the corner of the commission. But the point that we should try to address, though, what do we do as South Africans? Do we all fold our arms and say, abuse them because they are vulnerable anyway, they should disappear? Or all of us as leaders of the society, we come out with something to protect the most vulnerable amongst us? I thought that's an issue that we must address. And then all other matters really, they're nice, but they're not addressing the real issue. And then we can criticize the commission, ourselves, we'll deal with them, it's fine. But what do we do? Because there are a lot of problems. And I think the leadership should assist us as a committee to say, what should we do? The report is before us now. We are considering the report. That's why we allow you to assist us. And please try to assist us. Otherwise, we'll take our own decision. And assist us because we must address the problem. It's not, in fact, Reverend Mishu, I think you're very, little bit mild, what is happening in township. In fact, it's the worst abuse of any human being. And you are saying that the state must fold its arms and pray, say, oh no, well, we'll stop at a certain point. I thought the state has a right to protect the most vulnerable in any society, in whatever form. Otherwise, I can use my car to abuse people. No one touches me because I'm using my car. It can't work that way. But it's just important for us to assist us to understand exactly what we do. Because all of you say we don't like this abuse. But let us propose something that the committee should consider and then ensure that then we address the problem. None of us here are abused anyways, because we are elite in society, all of us here. We are elite in society, we are the most privileged in society. No one can abuse us, because, but the women in every corner, they are being abused. And then you must address that. Professors must assist us to address that. Professor might help, you must address the problem. It can't be right that the elite is happy and then we are not abused by anyone. None of us anyway drink petrol here because we refuse to do so. We would refuse even if a person come and say, Jesus did this, this, a Kalile, we would refuse to do so. But why do you then say, well, when you refuse, other people must accept that because they are vulnerable to society.
Yes.
I think the leadership here must assist us to address that question. Yes. I take the processes, all other things are very important. But what we do to protect the most vulnerable women, generally females, who are being abused in this situation. That's the point that Babu Uzosizako.
Chairperson, thank you so much. In fact, I wanted to say some of the things you have said as context to what I wanted to say, what I'm going to say now. Maybe let me just make some few disclaimers. I'm from the capital city, if it's still a capital city of South Africa, I'm from Pretoria, where the matter that has led to us, busy people who are here, to come to Cape Town and sit together and talk a while after certain things were reported. So I must make that disclaimer. Secondly, I must also indicate that I grew up to become ordained as a minister of the gospel by my pastors under whom I've served for several years in established churches within South Africa, and after also going to school and study theology, apart from my just normal academic line to PhD and all such kind of things. So I take what I believe in very seriously, and I read the Bible with interest, and also critically checked certain things that must be lessons and things that are instructions and things that I can share with fellow South Africans. So that I must indicate, Chairperson, so as it contextualizes what I'm going to say. And the last point is that I'm the least, I guess. I was just looking around the hall. In terms of height, don't worry. But in terms of age and experience on issues of faith, I think I'm the least of the people who are sitting here. And I was just listening with respect and interest as to what do we do in the next few decades to also contribute to better life to South Africans, both spiritually and also intellectually and physically. And 5 points are on my screen now, Chairperson. One is that I have read the document that has been compiled by CRL with interest. So I want to say on behalf of the team that I represent, which is called the Kingdom Governors, that also came together after we realized that there's a problem in Pretoria. It's almost 135 congregations. I don't know these other things, but I can account for 135 congregations of ministers from Centuria, the all seven regions of Tshwane. We came together and started to say, is this the kind of religion we want to be in? Are these the kind of things we want to perpetuate? Can we defend what we are seeing and all such? And that began a conversation in Pretoria, and we're still going on with that. But that is not what I want to address. The issue is, I want to humbly request that whatever we do, can we separate two things, or separate the mandate into two? look at things that truly need to be challenged and be stopped if we can find it able to stop them. And I'm linking it with what my elder said earlier, that if you look at the role of state in terms of protecting its people, we need to allow the state to see how they protect their people, as long as whatever they suspect is violating the rights of their people can be proven and they can stop that within the means that they have. And I think that I don't want to interfere with. Because if I am a minister of the gospel and I do certain things that causes my state, by the way, I'm not another government in a government. I'm a minister of the gospel in a country where there's order and all such kind of, take individuals away from a system so that you can understand that despite the misbehavior of convivaloids, you still have South Africa to protect, to run, and make it a habitable state. So I can't fold my arms and say because convives useless, then the whole South Africa is useless. That I disagree with the people. So I want to humbly say, Chair, there is a minister whose name I will not mention next to my city, who is very effective in education. When they see a Twitter comment which is suggesting that people are being abused, that MEC goes to where the Twitter source comes from. And 99.9% of the times that this person has done that, they were able to get into the tip of the problem and a solution was found. Fast forward, I don't think there's anything that can really restrict this forum, let alone the CRL, to also be able to identify things that just need action. So that concludes my first part. The second part is, I'm opposed to a spirit that behaves like this. When someone tries to do something to solve a problem, this one comes and criticizes this intervention, and then in criticizing that, come with certain things that seem like they support that or they want to bring something parallel or separate from that. I think that will not take us anywhere as South Africans. So my suggestion, Chair, is that piecemeal approach to the complex matter that really we need to deal with as a preventative measure now that these cases that were reported here have gone past. Some of those people have even left the country or they are hiding somewhere. Mm. My take is whoever has a suggestion, perhaps we need to agree here that we are South Africans, we have a South Africa to take care of. Let every noble or less noble idea be directed to the body, not the people, because I think we sometimes go to the body called CRL. If it's a wrong body in terms of structure, that is another method to deal with. So that we know South Africa, when we deal with religion and other related matters, there is CRL that brings us together. I've never seen this forum of this nature, Chairperson, maybe I'm naive, where people of diverse religions can come together and we are so tolerant and just enjoying ourselves like we're doing. I've never seen that. So CRL has got some magic that maybe must be perpetuated. That's the second point, and I'm concluding my submission. So I'm not for any conference that must be held in 2018 and the like and the like. If there's any conference, if there's any seminar, which arises from this engagement, I think let us be humble as South Africans and say, here's an idea, put it at the right platform, locate it according to the right structure, and let us challenge it together so that the benefit and the outcome must benefit the South African Chairperson. And I want to tell you, Chairperson, with respect, to say, lately, when you talk abuse of the vulnerable in my city, Pretoria, it's not uneducated people, it's not unemployed people, it's not poor people. Sometimes it's people who are models in society who, when it comes to certain kind of things, they just become, I don't have a word to use, and then they slide into that vulnerability. So I give you a hand when you say yourself you can't attempt to do certain things. But I'm seeing in my city people that I think are above average doing certain things. The last two comments, Chairperson, is that then an inclusive engagement, indeed, if we want to go forward, must be established. If what CRL has done is not inclusive at all, I don't think CRL will have to defend, to be defensive. It's not their issue. They want to contribute to South Africa. So an inclusive approach must be what. But here's a caution, Chair. I attended more than 8 forums where pastors were coming together to talk about this thing. Even in those forums, the elephant is in the room. There were more divisions among men and women of God. So I think for me, as a young South African, if we're saying we're going forward and we're inclusive, I would appreciate the process which, number one, is constructed, number two, is people-owned, number three, is proclaimed from some kind of a platform like this in a manner that reaches to all South Africans, even if it can be by all languages, so that we say we have evidence that certain things that made sense to South Africa were structured so that it can be a vehicle through which people can work together. And then if we do that, we can look at all gaps, and out of those gaps, we can come up with an outcome which unites us towards making South Africa, when it comes to the issues of faith and working for God, a world-class kind of approach that can be a force to be reckoned with. Those are my comments, Chairperson. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the question, which I will now attempt to respond to as best I can. We have certainly been very concerned, and we have been engaging with certain structures to suggest that there be a broad-based national convention of religious leaders, not just church leaders, because as has been correctly pointed out here, the CRL Rights Commission report and its recommendations would not just apply to the church, even though the church and the Christian church is obviously the major subject of their report, but that if we are looking for self-regulatory, sustainable, scalable solutions that are owned by the religious community and designed to police, if you like, or to self-regulate the religious community, they must be that type of broad-based inclusive process. One of the parties that we've been in discussions with on this has been the authors of, or the council that is looking after the Religious Freedom Charter. The essence of that being in very broad brush strokes that while that purports to give the certain explanations or outworkings of the rights of the religious community or freedom of religion, that what we need to also look at is developing a process so that we can develop the responsibilities of the religious community to those. I think it's also very important, sir, to say, when will this be convened? Again, there is no specific or set date for it. It is definitely a discussion point. I've heard it in multiple quarters. I'm hearing it here again today. I believe that the answer to that question should be, it should be convened sooner rather than later, really at the earliest opportunity. These issues, as I think has been apparent here, they are happening. It is imminent. It is important. It is a vital thing that we should certainly look at and happen. The question was then asked, you know, how do we stop these abuses? I think, sir, one of the things that is very important is that these abuses, when they are identified, are dealt with, because abuses under at any level, I think we can certainly say, whether it's drinking petrol, whatever the offence may be, these are very often criminal offences, and therefore, as you say, sir, the state, as the protector of the most vulnerable, has structures in place which are designed and in place to actually initiate this. I think one of the things that the church and the religious community should do is to certainly condemn these areas of abuse as and when they see them. I would like to specifically state in that regard that 4SA, when there was the Prophet of Doom incident, we quickly developed a petition which was actually then subscribed to by almost 100 of the structures that we engage with, and we sent that petition out roundly and soundly condemning what is in fact an illegal practice. The net result of that was that the Limpopo Department of Health actually took to task the offending pastor and obtained an interdict against him, not just for spraying in the face with doom, but for any other similar activity, at which point, if he was in breach of that, he would go to jail. There, I think, is a very important example of seeing where the law is enforced. But I do believe that these issues where we're considering other areas of what is actually an abusive thing, I believe that we need to develop those over and above that within the religious community so that we can come up with a process that develops solutions, real solutions, with level of real teeth, so that these issues can be stopped and these issues can be done. Because as you say, and as we have said as 4SA from the beginning, you cannot hide criminal or harmful or hurtful activities under the cloak of freedom of religion. That is completely unacceptable.
Chairperson, can I just ask a short follow-up before he leaves the microphone? The follow-up question is, who will be the convener of this national religious forum? Because I'm interested in that. Who will be the convener so that you can engage that convener?
Just to say on that, Pastor Kenneth, that at the moment we are not aware that there is a specific convener. We have certainly heard and had discussions around that with TISA. I know that the SACC are also aware of such a request for such a process. They may well engage in that thing. But I do believe that this is something which, if there was an encouragement, especially from this forum, I believe that that could be very quickly convened and arranged. I think there would be a huge buy-in from the religious community were such a thumbs up or even a signal be given that that would be something that would be viewed with appreciation or acceptability by this committee particularly.
Honorable Reverend Massoud, thank you very much for the question. You quoted, one cannot criminalize religious practice that is done voluntarily. It is the person's choice if they partake in those matters. You are raising a dilemma here that one faces. How can one protect people against themselves and their own conscientious choice? Maybe the only approach is education. But actually what I raised, and what you quote here is actually from the report, what I raised was on a different level, and I apologize if I was too rushed. If I may refer to point number 10 in my written submission, the UN Special Rapporteur, Heiner Bielefeld, stated that legislation and jurisdiction in many states do not adequately reflect the full scope of this human right, but often restricting its application to predefined types of religion while excluding non-traditional beliefs and practices, limiting the enjoyment of freedom of religion or belief to members of recognized religions is also in violation of the spirit and letter of universal human rights. And then a quote from his report on registration of religions. He says, while registration can have beneficial effects for those communities wishing to obtain such status, it is highly problematic if the government renders registration compulsory by turning it into a sine qua non, a condition that you must fulfill, of any communitarian enjoyment of freedom of religion or belief. It cannot be reiterated enough that freedom of religion or belief, qua its nature as a universal human right, inheres in all human beings prior to any process of administrative approval. It thus must be possible for individuals and groups of individuals to also practice their religion or belief independently from any official status, if they prefer not to obtain any such status or if their application for registration has been unsuccessful. So applied to the Commission's report, the Commission says all preachers need to be licensed, and if you don't behave, we withdraw your license. If you then preach anyway, you are criminal and the law will come upon you. The problem is that manifestation of religion that is unregistered but might still be legitimate is simply criminalized, not because of any wrongdoing, but just because of manifestation of religion. So I was defending freedom of religion. I was not condoning malpractice. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I must commend you for calling this meeting today. I feel there is a broad consensus actually developing that we must cooperate, and we must cooperate, all of us across the board, all religions and other institutions, and I would hope also the Commission cooperate with a view to develop the methods that would work for us in South Africa, the methods to address these abuses effectively. And that was also to answer the question, the context within which I referred to less restrictive means. I think there is a broad consensus here that the road indicated by the Commission is maybe not the best route to go of overall registration and regulation by the state. But that there must be better self-regulation by religious communities and others involved in this. I honestly feel, Chair, that if we can come together, and yes, somebody will take the initiative and write the first email or whatever, or make the first phone call, I think religions also today, and that's why I think it was so wonderful that you called this meeting, listen to each other also for the first time maybe about this. And I feel that is the first step to take, that the religions come together with everybody else who's interested and start talking about this. That's a less far-reaching means to achieve the purpose. I want to say that the educational side of it, Christoph also mentioned it now, I think it is so critically important that our people be better educated about their rights, about their responsibilities. Section 2 of the Charter says that no person may be forced to believe what to believe or what not to believe or to act against their convictions. There it is. Nobody can be forced to drink petrol, with all respect. It's already there, and we must educate our people about this. And I think that, again, I want to emphasize, I think the Commission can play a wonderful role in this to help us with this. Every religious institution must take the responsibility to educate their people, to educate their pastors and religious leaders. So that's the kind of less restrictive means that I have in mind. I just want to emphasize, Chair, the better or the more effective enforcement of the laws already on the statute book, the legal system already available. We must not underestimate that. And I think we are really at fault here by not thinking wider. What is the existing legal system already? What does it provide for already? It's there. It must just be implemented more effectively. Let me give you the example. It was mentioned here of horrible abuses taking place in churches. When you commit any act that harms anybody else, physical harm, which would include sexual harm, that is assault. That is assault. It is already part, since old Roman Dutch law, part of our legal system. That should not be tolerated. That should be addressed. It is a criminal offense. People should be prosecuted for that. So we have everything in place, but I think it comes back to education. All of us must be better educated. What is the legal system? What are our rights? What are our responsibilities? And I think when the religions can come together, and I would love for the Commission to be part of that. I don't know to what extent Parliament can be part of that, but that everybody come together and say, we are going to address this. We admit there are abuses. We've said it from the beginning. There are abuses. Let's come together. And I think that today is maybe a historical moment where we look each other in the eye and say, I'm prepared to sit down with you and talk about this. Let's go together forward and let's get a solution for this. Thank you, Chair.
I thank you very much for the opportunity to clarify a few issues. I think we need to understand, I think as this House, and I think we're humbled by the presentations and the contributions that are coming up, which are very constructive, which are forward-looking, which build rather than destroy. We needed to get some things out of our system that have been building for so long because we've not been heard. We have not been listened to. It was important that we go through that. If you look at this square, normally when you look at a diagram like this, people tend to focus on the black dot. That's what they see first, and not a white square with a black dot. They see a black dot on a white square, in the middle of a white square. In other words, what he's saying is, it is so much human nature. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a professor, I'm a sociologist. It is so much human nature to focus on things going wrong and not on things going right. Churches, Bandbagiti, build people. Churches protect the communities of South Africa. Churches protect society in South Africa. 99% of the churches do good in South Africa. The less than 1% are the black dot in the middle. So we should not spend too much time focusing on the black dot. Let's agree on how we remove it and move forward with the rest of the square. That is our position. We have plenty of recommendations, plenty. We got amazing institutional capability to make recommendations that will work because we represent millions of people, and not only millions of people, but millions of ordinary citizens of this country. The poor people of this country who need our help, who need our counseling, who need healing in every format, be it spiritual, be it financial, be it in any manner whatsoever. So we are saying, let institutions like the CRL help build the religion rather than subtract from the religion by demonizing it. Because this is what the commission effectively did. It focused only on the black dot. We don't like the black dot. We don't like people eating snakes. But we are saying, in order for us to solve those problems, we need an institution that will seek to understand the challenges clearly and specifically. The issues that we had with this study, we have spoken about them. Many people have spoken about them. Is in the absence of a clear definition of commercialization, it is impossible to solve it because you don't understand what it is. You have to understand it thoroughly, convince all stakeholders that you understand what you're dealing with. In the absence of a clear definition of abuse of people's faith, you cannot deal with it because you do not understand it. You know it, you don't understand it. So all we are saying is, you know, we want to avoid a situation which is very similar to many countries in Africa which with anti-corruption commissions, who end up being corrupt themselves. That doesn't solve problems. It compounds problems. We are saying to the CRL, we want the commission to avoid using the methods that they used because they don't only batter and bruise individual leaders, but they divide the Christian community particularly. Today and tomorrow, when other Christian leaders present here, you'll see what I'm talking about playing itself out. That there are stakeholders that have been positioned as friends of CRL, and they have been used to demonize some of us who have said, let us be objective about this, not simply conformist. To us, that's a tragedy that has to be resolved, and we need the support of institutions like this parliament to do that. Because we're not talking about our churches alone, we're talking about the citizenry of South Africa. Lastly, I want to deal with a question that was directed at us by one of the honorable members of parliament. It says, what is so wrong with summons? The summons were very wrong. Because let me give you an example, an anecdotal example. The police have the power to stop and search you on the street. If they used it every day, we would not be able to move even out of this building. They'll be waiting for us because they have the power to stop you. So they have to balance that with your freedom to move and stop you only when they have to, because there's something wrong with the way you're moving. So we are saying the summons, yes, the act, the Sierra Act, does have a provision which allows the commission to subpoena people. But when reasonably should they do that? They cannot start with a subpoena because they have a perception that you will refuse to attend a hearing. It shows them up as insecure. And we don't want a commission that comes up and looks insecure because we never refused to participate.
I didn't ask what was wrong with the summons. I said that the gentleman had raised the point that the summons was illegal. And the summons clearly is not illegal. That was what you said in your presentation, that it was illegal, and it's not illegal.
Sorry, can I just, with your permission, Mr. Chair, can I read from a judgment regarding one minister who was summoned,
but covered.
Okay, let me just read one sentence.
No, just hold on a minute.
Okay.
We are solo. We have already explained that the first step is to persuade people to appear before you, and then I think the commission knows. And then is when a person is summoned, even ourselves, we can summon anyone under the sun in South Africa. As long as you refuse to appear before the Committee of Parliament willing, then we have to summon you. As long as, of course, you can come and tell us what is the problem. I think the point that you are raising is that you didn't want to be summoned before you were even invited to come and attend and have a discussion with the commission. We understand the truth very well, Bamsa. Okay.
Good afternoon, brethren, member of parliament, member religious leader, religious bodies, I greet you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. I'm here where I'm standing. I am Archbishop Dr. M.P. Shole, Mudiri Patrick Shole. I am a president of South African Union Council of Independent Churches. I represent 25 federations, church federations in South Africa. Pentecostal churches, charismatic churches, and individual churches. The number that we are having, it's more than 3.6 million members with a projection to 5 million. We've got six provinces in South Africa, six provincial committees. We are launched on the 29th of August 2015 in Braamfontein Recreation Center when the organization was launched. On the 4th, we'll be launching two provinces in Western Cape and Limpopo. I'm sitting here, I will not introduce their names, Chairperson. I'm sitting here with the bishops from Episcopal Bishop College, which is part of SOSIC, that elevate bishops and train and for accountability. They are sitting here from all provinces, they are sitting here. We are here to observe for today. We are not making any submission, but I just wanted to, where I'm standing, from the members of the cloth discussing, I wanted to just comment, Your Honorable Chair. Chair, we already started to bring order in the country. I'm happy to see members of diversity in terms of social cohesion here. It has been very difficult to bring whites and blacks together under the same roof. Even though we are in the body of Christ, in the same spirit. But it's very difficult when you go to the community, you go to town, why still reject other black members to come to the church? And the concern here, it does not involve whites, it involves black communities. All of this circus that you see on the television, it does affect humankind, human rights. It does not happen in the white churches. Yes, there is order in some church, white churches, I do agree. But other black churches, because there is no proper policies in place in the border gate. Most of foreigners are coming in as a visitor's guest with a license permit for 3 months. When they enter the country, they marry our sisters. Anywhere they open space, they put up a tent, they hire a school, they open up a church. And you can't say anything. You can't call order because they... Thank you. You can't call order because there is no body. There is no code of conduct. There is no regulations that can bring everybody together. Everybody do his own things. I'll put some scenarios just to highlight it while there is an agency to bring self-regulation.
I'm going to take them back to
I will not mention the name. There was a church which I was invited. A member put up 30 chairs and said, anyone who wants the blessings for 25,000, you must come and sit here. He put the water on the chairs. So members, they are vulnerable, they need blessing, they need prosperity, they'll come here and sit in the chairs. There was 2 millionaire, there was a Miss South Africa finalist. Miss South Africa came, to finalist came and sit one chair. Millionaire came to another chair, and the rest came there. And then from there said, whoever wants 10,000, they follow. 2,000, they follow. Is it what you want in South Africa, ladies and gentlemen? No, we don't want that. It's a shame, particularly to a man who will let loss. We need to bring order. And the only way is what CRL have started. Nobody has said anything. The government was in place. Nobody federation have done that. Today, we've got so many federations making a lot of noise. Let us not make noise. Let's focus. Accountability. Violation of human rights. Violation of human rights. You've seen a minister from Nigeria, Omotoso. He had a lot of resources. He had to put up at the hotel, transport our children with the buses, sleeping with them, that you'll be holy if I sleep with you, because you're a virgin. And he identified those children who don't have fathers. It was good for them to get money for the clothes, to be fed and to be transported. And members of the clothes say nothing about Omotoso until the media exposed. Is this what you want in South Africa? Is this the society that you want in South Africa? Men of God, there is a man of God who from Malawi, I will not mention, I don't have money to be sued. He's in Pretoria. He's hiring a city of 20 premises, 20 sports center. Yes. He's throwing all members to the church saying, he's doing miracles better than me and other ministers here. And people are vulnerable. They take all the pension, they withdraw the pension, they're selling houses, they're selling their cars. They're giving to this poor man who's from Malawi just to come get all this to get the miracles. What are you saying? What have you done? He is not a citizen. And he, for right now, you already bought four jets. Four jets. None of you got a jet. But you allow this man to come and drain the money. He's not even investing the money in the bank. Yes. That's a crime. He's circulating the money, taking out from his Malawi. And they're saying nothing. And some high-profile members, whom I can't even mention, they are going there to his church. Because they are looking at the number of people that he's throwing them to there. I don't know how, whether does he use snake, or use Holy God, or the Holy Spirit, I don't know what kind. It has never tested. But those are the things that you need to know. I know. The spirit, you need to go to the spiritual realm and test the spirit. You don't just follow a man with a collar and said he's a man of God. There are so many. Now, I wanted to tell you, there was some of you, you are quite aware what's happening in the television. There's a man of God in Johannesburg. You call a man that if you want a wife, the husband, you must bring 5,000 rand. I'll bless you for 5,000. Can you buy your wife? Is it possible? Can you buy her salvation? I'm talking to the man of God, Dr. Lachie, because we are in a fivefold: apostle, prophet, pastor, evangelist, teacher. I'm talking about same spirit, same gospel of Jesus Christ that we are preaching. We're not talking about anything from different from the Bible. Are we saying we should sell the woman, our woman, for a marriage? For 5,000. They're coming from Namibia, they're coming from all over the world. The man is driving Ferrari. Is it what you want? Is that what you wanted it to do? No. Something must be done. Something must be done. I'm saying something must be done. Brethren, if we don't do anything, government will do something. And please don't stop them saying you are not a Christian. Don't say you are not righteous. You cannot decide for us. Because what have you done? What have you done from early 1994 until now?
Chair, I'm very concerned about the outburst against foreign people in this committee hearing. Many of the abusers have been South African pastors. So to start labeling foreigners is tantamount to xenophobia. And I am very concerned that that has not been called to order, Chair. We've got to look at religion and the abuse of religion by all people, whether they are South Africans or Malawians or Zimbabweans or Americans or Chinese or whatever. That's the first point. The second is that there has been repeated mention of the Christian faith here, and this is not about the Christian faith. It is about all faiths. It is about all religions, whether they are Jewish or Hindu or Muslim or Buddhist or whatever. It is about commercialization and abuse in all faiths. Chair, I'd ask that you keep this debate on the topic and keep people to the topic, because we really are starting to stray into areas that are problematic if we start making this about the Christian religion, first of all. And if we start making this about foreigners, then it's very problematic, and I would have to object at that point.
So I will focus on what you said, just to accommodate him. As a man of God,
I think their point, of course, these are community leaders who are here. Surely they must be sensitive on some of the issues. We can't call bishop to order. The bishop to order is a difficult thing to do. It's very big to do. You must allow bishops
to talk.
I'm just saying we should not, you can't expect us to tell them what to say, what not to say. They know exactly what should be said, what should not be said. And Bishop, I think you will try to limit the Of course, we are explaining your experience,
yes,
generally.
Yes.
And then that is the experience that we are explaining. And then, of course, we are here also to assist us to understand many issues that we don't understand. But we take the point that Melham is raising, that we mustn't come out as if there are only people who are this one, others are not. I think that's the point that is raising. That we must also implicate people and think that those are from Malawi, generally, are very wrong and all that. I think that's the point that is raised. And I know that when we are taken captured by the spirit, captured by the spirit, sometimes we may raise other issues. But it's understood what we are saying.
Yeah.
Exactly. We are bringing to our attention some of the abuses that are happening on the ground.
Yeah.
And try to conclude.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I accommodate you, my brother. In the house of order, there should be order. It's true, a child can call order his father. But in due respect, Chairperson, House of the of Parliament, even South African, we have already started with Sosi. Even South African pastors, those who've got big churches, those who've got money, they are very much pompous. They are small gods. They are small gods. And how will you call order to them? So, we need to control these people. There is no God than the only the Almighty God that we all pray. So, that is the reason why it happens. I'll give you an example, a chairperson. Among my members, my children, in the Lord, there was one CRL summoned. That was a mistake in the beginning, the summoned. He was very aggressive. He went to court. He had four advocates, a lawyer, wanted to go there. I approached him spiritually. He came down. I said, let's represent you. And when he get to the CRL, he realized differently. That he said, why you summoned? He changed the tone. And we all agree that the manner in which they approached first, it was wrong. But they explained that they need to account, because they can't come to Cape Town and have a meeting and the members are not there. They need to way of calling them. But it was correct. The other one, you bought a land in the industrial area to put up a church with 45,000 members for one day service. 45,000 members. He took advantage, there is a space around. You put up a tent. And you put up a camera facing the neighbor. So even the neighbor, when he's going to the bathroom, he can see the neighbor with a camera, video camera, saying that he wants to protect himself for the money that has been raised in the church. But now all I wanted to say to you is that if there's no control over these things, everybody will do whatever that they wanted to do. So, because it's a bigger church, you've got a lot of money, you can hire the best advocate, the best lawyer, you can do whatever that you can do. So, I'm sending my sentiment as a Sosik, and everyone... Oh, my bishop is saying I'm running out of... I already said accelerate the time. Brethren in the Lord, I'm saying, let's focus on two priorities, accountability and the violation of human rights. Let's leave other things. We'll see them as we cross the bridge. And Chairperson, I'm proposing, because I realize some of the members have never got an opportunity to come to Parliament or perhaps to see the CRL. Perhaps maybe the government could assist to be a convener, to have a convention where everybody can make a submission and then to be heard, so that tomorrow people will say, even those who are against with the CRL, they should also be participate there, and then so that we can have a policy that can accommodate churches, not federation, a church of God in South Africa, not a particular federation, not anybody, but a church of Christ. Amen.
We are captured by the spirit.
Chairperson, the House is sitting in 20 minutes, and I have two questions that I request to be answered before I leave. The one question was about the National Qualifications Act, and the question was, should churches be registered, or should the National Qualifications Act be applied to churches, and does that mean that churches should be registered? And the second one, to my colleague, my neighbor here, was whether churches that are selling water, oil, and garments should be registered for tax. And for them to be registered for tax, the question again is, should they be registered? And if they are registered, should they be registered as NPOs, non-profit organizations, or how should they be registered? Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. May I respond to Pastor Kenneth and the question about the NQF Act and the professional body to which has been registered now in terms of the NQF Act. Our agreement right from the start with SAQWA was that this professional body will not be compulsory, that it will be voluntary. The reason why the professional body was formed, the reason why SAQWA actually approached us, I was at that stage with the University of Pretoria, and SAQWA indicated to us that there is a need for a professional body to be formed, and the major reason was because there was a need in the informal church environment for accredited training of pastors who did not have the opportunity of being trained with accredited training, recognized training, which could form the basis of a training career. And SAQWA said that if we want to bring a training dispensation where pastors, for instance, pastors without a matric, or pastors who for very many different reasons do not have access to universities and faculties of theology and seminaries and so on, the pastors with a need for training without that opportunity, there is a new dispensation for training that needed to be formed. And the NQF Act also provided for the implementation of what is called occupational qualifications under the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations. So to be able to access those possibilities, there was the need for the formation of a professional body that could actually steer the process of the development of those qualifications. So that's where the whole process started. And in our investigations, we found that there were high numbers, very, very high numbers. Our research actually indicated that there are around 200,000 pastors in South Africa, of whom about 10% have had the opportunity of being trained and were in the formal church environment, which means that about 180,000 pastors were in the informal environment and did not have the opportunity for formal training. So that was a concern to SAQWA, and they requested us, or they suggested to us, form this professional body that could start working towards the development of a training dispensation under the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations for those pastors who cannot go to universities, who cannot go to those. But then it was also found that some of the informal churches needed this as a service to help them formalize their own professions. It was found that the pastoral care environment also needed, seriously needed, the professionalization of their profession. And so the professional body structure was established in such a way that it could also serve the needs of those who actually need professionalization. But we said to SAQWA right from the start, this cannot be compulsory. That needs to be voluntary, and only for those who need the services. So churches and spiritual leaders, pastors and training institutions and pastoral counselors who need this formal professionalization service under the NQF Act are welcome to come, and we have identified many, many, many of them who are actually coming forward voluntarily and say, please, we need this. But those who don't need the service, our intention was never to be make it compulsory, so I can also set Pastor Kenneth at ease. Nobody's going to be forced with this, but it is a service to the church environment to help solve the kind of problems that were were identified by the CRL Commission. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. For
thank you very much, Chair. And also thank you to Reverend Mishwe for that question. I would think that while we are contesting with a phrase commercialization, we should consider that, Chair, every law, when it is developed, it must be cross-cutting. It should not, in essence, be specifically targeted to a specific sector of society. And there are laws already in place. We've got the PBO, the NPO Act and the PBO provisions within the SARS Act. And I would think that if a church or any religious grouping that is operating should be to some degree registered. And if they are doing a business or if they are selling something like regalia or whatever the case may be, they don't necessarily have to be paying tax according to the SARS provisions of the public benefit organizations. Because the application should be to all institutions. It should not only be to churches. If you are an NPO, non-profit making organization, you are not prohibited from selling anything. It is just you are prohibited from sharing profits. But if you are going to sell water or whatever to raise funds, it's like selling cakes or plates or whatever the case may be to raise funds. And the CRL should not be looking specifically at the church situation, whereas the rest of the non-profit making organizations are making and are raising billions. I mean, the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund is one example that we all know that we can use. It's got millions of money, and they're using it, and it's fine. So I would think that the same must apply to the churches and religious institutions, and it should not be the church must be made a sinner just because they are selling a bottle, they're buying it, because I know the chairperson of the commission likes that example, to say you buy a bottle of water for 6 rand, you sell it for 27 rand. But the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund would use an SMS system that costs 150, and they would say when you send an SMS, you will be charged 25 rand. So why should it apply to one and not the other? So in conclusion, Chair, I hope I've done justice to the question of Reverend Mishra. Also, I would think that it is very evident in this sitting that we need a platform for consultation. We need a platform for engagement. And I would think we're going to raise issues, and I'm glad that you're protecting Dr. Shole there. Because I would think that there's a lot of issues that we need to discuss, and we will produce documents. We are professionals. We know how to do this work. We would ask that maybe we could be trusted by the Commission to say we can work with them, we can raise issues, we can produce documents, we can agree on issues, and then we will bring professionalization into this sector. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well, it's quite true. It's been long for us. I think we are exhausted now, and the bishop can't assist us, and because we are not going to the chamber, General. Those who are going to the chamber, they will go. Other members are allowed to be here until 4. We are going to be receiving presentation from Council of Churches, Christian Family Church, Christian Concern Network of Baptist Union of Southern Africa, Association of Christian Media, Anglican Catholic Church, Northern Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, Rich South Africa, Dutch Reformed Church, Alliance of Pentecostal, Charismatic Churches, and after lunch we are going to give them again opportunity to make presentation. Again, it's 10-minute presentation. And engagement, as we have done already. I think they are covered broadly.
that are covered broadly. They may take 5 minutes of presentation, because some of the issues, I guess, they have been covered already. Many professors and many doctors, sociologists, and it's a good idea, but sociologists also have fees, and they can assist us to deal with the nation cohesion's question and other issues that we need to do. Then let us start at our past two. We'll meet also here, have discussion. Reverend Mishra, as you have debated that side, you can also come back. We need you here to have this discussion. Professors, and I think they are here, they are not leaving. We'll have discussion again to assist in this platform of sharing experiences and whatnot. Thank you very much for your presentation. Great again to meet with you. Let us meet at 2:30. Those who still be around, those of course have to leave, they are free to leave and go to do whatever.
I only saw her down on the floor. Oh, there you are. Hi. I better call my friend Randy already, who was my chief director of research in Macau, Portland, because there's a better place for her than her Thai education. So Randy has 2 months to do. Once she went and got the business.
Telecommunications. Went from rural development to post and telecommunications and then to home affairs.
She did great work at post. She didn't stay long enough at home affairs. Now the poor DG has been sacked.
Yeah, she is.
She's sacked,
yeah.
Isn't it?
What? Is the case in court or something?
What happened?
Was the case in court?
Was it really being arbitrated? It's hard to say, eh?
Well,
it's tough.
Are we supposed to go and eat? Why? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Is the chair already here? No, a flight should be leaving now.
She says that the CEO must facilitate a meeting with all those that are presenting on our behalf tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
I booked the boardroom already.
They
said that he must speak to him. And I need to speak to Brian about the presentation.
I even had surgery this morning in the medics. They took my stitches out.
All that's better now.
I was courageous. She came with a scalpel, man. I nearly had a heart attack.
Was it?
Yeah.
They never give you any tranquilizer, eh? Like go straight for jugular, like here they go, scalpel, oh my god.
But you are feeling better, you would just
I feel much better if I put a beam in the person feeling better.
Just to have that chin out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's an epic month, almost month of trauma with a broken tooth.
Yeah. You know what, I saw you the last time and I said to you, Natasha.
Hello, Dr. Johannes. Your friend is Wustendachle. الحيمه تكون وفين Brian, where did you get that?
The drink, man. What did you want to drink? Asked if you made the amendment to the presentation.
Okay.
You email me as well. Right? I will give you yours.
But it's not becoming a connection.
It's a daylight.
No, email. I've got an email.
No, email.
Oh, you don't have 3G.
I wouldn't leave it.
Where would you go for tonight?
I'm not sure, Che.
I think my pastor went to check. The CEO went to check. He's speaking to Shireen.
Oh.
I'm glad that she was not here today. It was actually, at some stage, a bit abusive.
I'm not going anywhere.
I think some people can't.
There were two questions,
and which I think maybe we should also consider.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, with all the notes that we did, we heard everything that we said as well. We'll change. We'll look at the presentation
and
see how.
I was not aware that.
Yeah. But I recorded everything as well.
Yeah, because it'll help us. These are our cameras.
Yeah, the name of our camera is Silent.
Brian? I'm thinking of what you want to tell my son, Brian Ralu.
Oh, yeah.
He knows them better.
She is saying that we need to coordinate a meeting this evening with all those people that are supposed to be presented. Yeah, but I don't know. The CEO speaks to them already.
The DC.
Most of them are disqualified. I'm so disappointed.
Brian, is there a juice there?
I'm so disappointed with the...
Listen, is there a juice there?
FIFA. I was so disappointed. And Che kept on saying to the CEO, I don't want FIFA here.
The
body is the same thing, yeah? Yeah, I spoke with him, yeah. He wanted me to redirect his
I'm going to go to the next one.